It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go once again, the final broadcast of the first full week of July 2018. It is the sixth day of July 2018. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live, and that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Madcap Mary Multimedia Zany Wacky Real-Time Screwball Extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump right in. You'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Squeaky and DT Blom and more who wander along as the program continues. You'll all be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has indeed folded space this evening to become both Sparky and Man Cave, yes. And you'll also be moderated by midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. I didn't get to check in previously, but I trust little Cletus is okay after the barrage, the 4th of July fireworks barrage of the other night. I hate that. That's just sad. Because, you know, our animals don't know that something awful isn't happening. So here's hoping little Cletus and little Twiggy emerged safely from the chaos. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Friday on the front porch, which means that in about 57 minutes or so, we will fire up the extraordinary ordinary roundtable and engage in the week-ending tradition that has developed here. Feisty, sometimes hilarious roundtable of just whatever's on folks' minds as we wind out the week. If you would like to be part of the extraordinary ordinary roundtable, well, send a contact request on Skype. Skype is quite easy, send it to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc on Skype, and Sparky will in turn show you the breadcrumb trail to the old holla tree wherein the extraordinary ordinary round table is placed and in which we have our Friday on the front porch conversation. We have thanks to send out. We always have thanks to send out, or not, well, not always, but we always thank our subscribers at the beginning of the program, and so the thanks go out. Well, let me with a caveat. Let me send thanks out right now to Cecilia. Thank you, Cecilia, so very, very much. Cecilia responded to James's challenge last night, meaning that we finished the evening with only $280 to go last night. Added to that, that means we've only got $480 to finish the week. That's 2 days and a half a day. So basically, we're catching up with 7:30 to 9 p.m. Wednesday, last night's program and tonight's program, and then we'll be even for the first full week of July. If you want to help out, run over to headon.live. There's a PayPal button there. You can click that button. And if you'd like to become a subscriber and be thanked at the beginning of the program for your day of the month, well, then just click that little, check that little box there that says make this a recurring donation. Mr. Soros, type the number 1 and then just type zeros until your little hand gets tired. And then click make this a recurring and then we'll be good. That's for you, Mr. Soros, or any other big time liberals that we hear about all the time. But Mr. Soros in particular, because, of course, because it drives the white wing quite out of their freaking minds. What little minds they have. Oh, my God, I've started talking like James Kirk. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. But, yes, everybody else, well, I mean, you know how it works out. $10 a month, you're down less than one half of one McDonald's hamburger, no cheese, for each broadcast. And, well, yeah, there's not much that 48 cents or so will buy all by itself anyway. So that's the subscription thing. You can also subscribe over at Patreon. And we're getting out a few more bumper stickers, and everybody who contributes, who jumps in at $20, gets the two bumper stickers. Remember the horn bumper sticker and the "They Want It All" bumper sticker. Okay. So there's that as well. And thank you to Thomas out in Washington. Thank you, Thomas. Thomas just became a Patreon subscriber. And If you don't want the stickers or whatever, you know, kick in at $1. Shoot, if we had a whole bunch of people kicking in at $1, we'd be awesome. So that's where that all stands. Like I said, in about by about 7 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, we'll be firing up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And let's see here. It has been wildly enjoyed. So I thought, with the end of the week, we should probably wrap up our coverage of the Second Civil War, because the hashtag has slowed down a little bit, but there's still some good stuff out there. Oh yeah. And so it seemed to, yeah, that's a good idea. People seem to get a good giggle out of that. And so with that in mind, correspondence from the Second Civil War. Dearest Mother, 27 minutes into the war and it's over. Turns out it was a spelling bee, and not one of the opposing side could spell your or your or your or tell the difference between them. Dear Bell, Pink Hats of Minnesota 1st Pussy Brigade have us surrounded. Their onslaught is day and night. Solar chargers and efficient rechargeable battery packs leave us with our wall cords dangling. The end is nigh. Kiss little Bubba for me. Dear family, we saw a large contingency of red hats clinging to Stone Mountain down in Georgia. We were able to pass easily. If they started to move, we feinted towards the mountain, and they clung even tighter. Dear Martha, Today, the air conditioner in the office was so cold it took several lives. I mean, they went home early on a Friday, but they went home cold. My dearest Mrs. Tucker Carlson, we write you today with a heavy heart. Sadly, Tucker was found suffocated under one of Trump's neck folds that it appears he was trying to lick clean. We suggest in the future you find a husband who's not, well, a Carlson. Dear children, Friday at the home, ice cream for all. The peace talk news is not good. The dear leader had a meeting in Montana with a small group of red hats. I'm afraid we will have to storm D.C. with a blue wave in November from the AARP regiment. My dearest love, we have captured Mar-a-Lago and liberated the slaves. Their cowardly leader has escaped to the fields of the Virginias armed with only a club. Karaoke around the pool tonight. Yours forever, Ainsley. Dearest, I find I'm on my last sheet mask and my skin dries on our long march to Grabber's Gulch. Tiki torches capped with maggot hats line the road, reminding us how far we still need to go. Operation Scaramouche is underway. Send artisanal coffee. Your beloved. Mother, last night our troops liberated all the detention camps. Our French allies have successfully reclaimed the Louisiana Purchase. Canadians control the northern border. Rumor has it Trump and company have fled to Moscow and are in hiding. Dispatch 1122 to General Biden from Colonel John Kelly. Today, the entire Alex Jones Brigade walked into our camp and surrendered. They said they had been lied to and forced into this unnecessary war. They burned their maggot hats first, and then begged for something to eat besides paleo chocolate chicken bone beverage. My dearest love, today was pure horror as the men witnessed Vice Admiral Pence looking on as General Hannity attacked from the rear. Captain Jordan just grimaced. Fear level is high. Please send protection. My dearest, Operation Martha's Vineyard was a success. Alan Dershowitz was successfully isolated from posh parties this season. Do not worry, as I'm considering the days without Rosé, Burrata, and Wi-Fi, a summer detox. Dearest, our verbal assault was successful. The MAGA are gone. Sprouts is secure. A carrier labradoodle brought word to the IKEA as umlauts confound them. We make haste. My brothers and sisters,
I regretfully report that I will not be able to make the battlefield for the Second Civil War. I was drafting battle plans in a Starbucks when I was arrested for not buying anything. You must stay strong in my absence. Dear Ma, I am writing from our bivouac, where we have been held in readiness for battle, which never comes. No electricity, no distractions, only the relentless blare of Fox News. Many, I fear, have already gone mad from listening. Pray for me. Fair little writ of the sea battle, wherein our hardy vessel did overtake and board the MAGA frigate Covfefe. The rascals bobbed in the foam, begging for rescue, crying, "Me too, me too." We smiled at the irony. It's not going at all well for the maggots, for their leader seems to have reached a level of mental instability. Heretofore unimagined. As he attempted to rally the troops last night in a tiny space in Montana that utilized a lot of curtains so as to make the crowd appear larger than it was, he has a talent for attempting to make things look larger than they are. He said the following, and this is a direct quote. To be fair, there were many things that he said, but this is the Everest of his madness. I've broken more Elton John records. He seems to have a lot of records. And I, by the way, I don't have a musical instrument. I don't have a guitar or an organ. No organ. Elton has an organ. And lots of other people helping. No, we've broken a lot of records. We've broken virtually every record. Because, you know, look, I only need this space. They need much more room. For basketball, for hockey, and all of the sports, they need a lot of room. We don't need it. We have people in that space. So we break all of these records. Really, we do it without, like, the musical instruments. This is the only musical, the mouth. And hopefully, the brain attached to the mouth. Right? The brain, more important than the mouth, is the brain. The brain is much more important. Donald J. Trump, July 5th, 2018. Even the maggots didn't know quite what to make of it. And you know, lest you think I'm funning, that's real. That's a real quote from last night. The same harangue. These aren't speeches. They're harangues. Which is not nearly as good as meringue. These are harangues. And it included attacks on George H.W. Bush. An inadvertent attack on Ronald Reagan. I mean, okay, no, not inadvertent, but indirect. He claimed to be the first Republican president since Eisenhower to win Wisconsin. He claimed to have won by bigger margins than Reagan won.
Now, this is, if you tuned in here, dear friend, and you're a first-time listener or something, please don't be expecting much in the way of Reagan hagiography here. That greasy-headed old B-movie actor. I happened to be wandering through YouTube the other night, down the YouTube rabbit hole, and I found an SNL skit that I had forgotten about. It's ancient. It features Phil Hartman playing Reagan. If you want a good laugh, look up Ronald Reagan Mastermind, SNL. And it's funny because it operates on the theory that Ronald Reagan was actually an evil genius with a mind like a steel trap that knew everything. And at a moment's notice, he was able to turn on the doddering old fool routine. It includes Dana Carvey doing his really, really very good Jimmy Stewart impression. But seeing that, I saw that, and then through the miracle of synchronicity this morning, I actually got to look at the transcripts of what the Maggot King said about Reagan's election. Now, bear in mind, Ronald Reagan carried Wisconsin, and Richard Nixon carried Wisconsin. And that's after Dwight Eisenhower. I don't have to say that, but it you know, just to keep things in perspective. But here's another piece of perspective. I think I know why he said it. You know Scott Baio. Bio, Buo, Buyu, Bayou, whatever. B-A-I-O, B-I-B-A-I-A-O, B-I-N-G-O, and Bingo was his name-o. Scott Baio was on Happy Days for a time. And he's also, you know, a big-time loudmouth maggot. Ran his mouth when one of his co-stars passed away. Aaron Morin. But he loves him some Donald Trump. Didn't he get to speak at the Republican National Convention back in 2016? I think so. Along with that other list of, that other group of D-list luminaries that lit up the stage. I think Donald Trump thinks he's the only Republican to win Wisconsin since Eisenhower because there was an episode of Happy Days in which there was some mild dissension inside the Cunningham home Mr. C and Mrs. Cunningham were decidedly I like Ike. And young Richie had decided that he was going to be an Adlai Stevenson man. And of course, everybody understood that Adlai Stevenson was a brilliant man, big brains, lots of thinking. And honest to God, I think maybe somewhere along the way, one of the spirochetes reached out and grasped the memory of that Happy Days episode, and that's why he thinks he's the first person, the first Republican to win Wisconsin since Dwight Eisenhower. You gotta admit, it makes sense. He went on to disparage Reagan's victory, who in 1984, much to my chagrin at the time, it was the first presidential election in which I'd been able to vote. Well, Ronald Reagan won the popular vote by some 13.9 million votes over his over his challenger. Do you remember Walter Mondale? And it was seen as a validation of everything of Ronnie's triumph over America. Oh, God Almighty! But all of a sudden, that just vaporized, and the Maggot King was suddenly greater than Reagan. Reagan, who had approval ratings, you know, there's no accounting for opinion and taste in this country. Reagan, who had approval ratings that the Maggot King will only ever dream of. But yeah. I got away from my topic, though. I need to get the thank yous out. So I mentioned thank you to Cecilia for finishing James's challenge. But we have to thank the subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Laurel there in Minnesota. Thank you, Laurel. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks as well to Chris in Germany. And thank you very much to Sal, our buddy Sal. Thank you, Sal. Thanks to Kitty in Boston. Thank you, Kitty. Thank you very kindly to Bob in North Carolina. Thank you very kindly to Kim. Kim and Malin in New Jersey. Fending off the Bears. Probably still. Thank you to Don in West Tennistan. Thanks very kindly to Alex in New York. And thanks very much indeed to Brock in PA. Thank you one and all. You are all partial sponsors of the program. And, well, doggone it, you're at least 25% of the reason that this program remains on the air. Thank you to all of our subscribers. Note coming from Matt in San Francisco. To think, subject line, and I thought, to think I was moved by, when we are met with cynicism and doubt and people who say we can't, we will answer with that timeless creed that sums up the power of a people. Yes, we can. If only I'd known about how many people it takes to put on an Elton John show. I don't know. Uh-oh, criticism coming from our buddy Todd, Barbecue Todd in South Carolina. Second Civil War, your humor is no longer funny. It has become problematic. Thanks to your Second Civil War letters, segments, blight has descended upon our humble home. When the Florentine Films violins began to play, none other than Shelby Foote appeared on our front porch. His foul odor, and well, that would be zombie Shelby Foote. His foul odor and disheveled aura were so salient as to arrive before his physical manifestation. When asked to leave, he only responded, "Why?" in a deep South drawl. He then proffered a jug of corn and presented a PBS canvas book satchel filled with heavily highlighted and bookmarked volumes of Confederate Civil War history. The greasy Post-it notes were spilling out from the top of the bag. When I last looked, he was settled in my rocking chair on the front porch. Not only am I in recovery from a hernia, but now I must contend with this nuisance. We are sending him your way tonight with deliberate speed, you Yankee. Wait a minute. Oh, there, yeah, that's cowbell material, if anything is. Absolutely. Okay, I will. Randy. Irish Dave with a note. Me too, me too. Oh, the irony, enough to cure anemia. T-rump of the will, fully ignorant, but sans tiki torches. Ooh, another cowbell. This one going out to Steve in New York. Subject line, harangue. We have another nickname. God, you guys are good. Harangutan. Holy smoke, the harangutan. That's gonna stick like gorilla glue. President harangutan. Everybody, use it in your Twitter feeds. Put it on your Facebook posts. This is original and absolutely a horn creation courtesy of Steve in New York, inspired by yours truly. President Harangutan. That's freaking brilliant. That's everything. That's Zen perfection. That's a haiku by Basho that he worked on for 70 freaking years. President Harangutan. Oh my God. That's good. That's crispy, ice cold kolsch pulled out of a zinc bucket with rock salt on the ice at a temperature just a hundredth of a degree Fahrenheit above the point at which the beer begins to turn to slush after you've mowed an acre with a non-self-propelled mower and the sweat is pouring off of you and you say, I must have relief, and pfft, and you take that first good swallow of crisp, golden, malted delight with just ever the faintest hint of hops, and under the relentless glaring sun, you feel the relief coursing through you, and you hold the bottle up to that sun, and you say, not today, not today. Yeah, oh, that's good. That's awesome. Where do we go from there? President Harangutan. I don't know. Speaking of demigods in Wisconsin, says Irish Dave. Fresh off his Wheeling debut, Tail Gunner Joe, during the 1952 presidential election, the Eisenhower campaign toured Wisconsin with McCarthy. In a speech delivered in Green Bay, Eisenhower declared that while he agreed with McCarthy's goals, he disagreed with his methods. In draft versions of his speech, Eisenhower had also included a strong defense of his mentor, George Marshall, which was a direct rebuke of McCarthy's frequent attacks. However, under the advice of conservative colleagues who were fearful that Eisenhower could lose Wisconsin if he alienated McCarthy supporters, he deleted this defense from later versions of his speech. Courage! Okay, well, that's generous of you, and it's true. Steve in New York says, I must insist on credit being given to the entire fraternity of Steves. My God, Steve, you do have the fraternal spirit. You absolutely do. We got to come up with a lodge sign, a high sign, and a password, and a secret handshake, and phrases mumbled in Latin and everything for the fraternity of Steves. But then again, I guess that's something the Steves would need to design. And I'm not a Steve. All right. Well, what else do we what do we have in the stack this evening besides the madness of Montana? Wait, is that in the stack? given all that went on last night, and we've seen him go nuts. But I dare say, not like last. Was he driven madder by the fact that it was a tiny little crowd and they had to do everything? They had to do everything that they could to make it look like the crowd was something, you know, that they were making maggot purses out of sow's ears. I don't know. But given that he went to Montana, I think it would be just entirely wrong. Wait a minute, what the hell is that? I forgot to stop the corny tinny music. All better now. This speaks to the madness of Montana and President Harangutan.
Just to raise me up a crop of dental floss. Raising it up, waxing it down, in a little white box that I can sell uptown. By myself, I wouldn't have no boss, but I'd be raising my lonely dental floss. I just might grow me some beans, but I'd leave the sweet stuff to somebody else. But then, on the other hand, I would keep the wax and melt it down, pluck some floss and swish it around. I'd have me a crop, and it'd be on top. That's why I'm moving to Montana.
Moving to Montana soon. Gonna be a dental floss tycoon.
Yes, I am.
Moving to Montana soon. Gonna be a dental floss tycoon.
Yeah, did you notice that? Dental floss. Right. Yeah, how could you not? Because I mean that was some 200 proof stump liquor crazy. At some point in time he's just going to take his clothes off on stage. He is. I mean it's going to be that bit. And you know it comes from the movie Dream Team. Peter Boyle. Plays the guy who just—he's so harmed and so wounded by his life in corporate America and what he realizes he's done in terms of the stuff that he's because he was an ad exec or something, the crap that he's pushed on the American people and the evil that he's just sort of pumped into the body politic that he just feels filthy all the time and he can't keep his clothes on and he's got a little and he wanders into. He wanders into a church service somewhere in New York because they've gone to see a ball game. I think it was a Mets game, wasn't it? And, you know, we use this on prayer meeting Wednesday.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. the fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane.
Yeah, because Peter Boyle has, by that time, removed almost all of his clothing. I think he gets to all of his clothing before the stop, this man is clinically insane line. And one of these days, I mean, I'm convinced, President Harangutan is just going to begin disrobing in front of the maggots so that they can see him in all his elemental glory. I mean, that's, oh, President Harangutan. Wow. Wow. By the way, Steve, Irish Dave says, now that's A-material. I'm humbled by the awesomeness of Steve's. Irish Dave adding, I don't have to tell you that Montana is often called the Bigly Sky Country. But were there chemtrails? Not chemtrails! Now, you know, you can hold off the damage caused by chemtrails with some paleo chocolate chicken bone malt beverage stuff, goo. And it's only $99.95 for a 30-day supply. You know, just ask Alex Jones. Or General Alex Jones, now that he started and lost a second Civil War. Oh, God almighty. Some things to check in on. Things are going from bad to worse for noted defender of freedom, Jim Jordan of Ohio. Two more former members of the Ohio State University wrestling team have come forward. They say the same thing the previous wrestlers did. Oh, yeah! Jim Jordan knew plenty about Dr. Richard Strauss and his miraculous techniques for healing sprained thumbs by taking down by pulling down a wrestler's pants. Mm-hmm. Former student-athlete Sean Daly, interviewed by NBC, said he got groped on a number of occasions by Dr. Richard Strauss back in the mid-90s. He said he was too embarrassed to report the abuse directly to Jordan, who was the assistant coach of the wrestling team. But he said that devoted defender of freedom and guardian against the perfidy of Rod Rosenstein and any besmirching of President Harangutan's honor and credibility and veracity and truthiness. Well, he said Jordan was part of conversations that took place about what was described as the systemic abuse of student athletes. It gets worse for Jim Jordan, though. Sean Daly said he also donated to Jim Jordan's first campaign for state representative back in 1994. Again, talking to NBC, he said, Jimmy's a good guy, but to say that he had no knowledge of it, I'd say that's kind of hurtful. Then there's former UFC world champion Mark Coleman. And he was roomies with Jim Jordan on several wrestling trips. Interviewed by the Wall Street Journal, he said, there's no way Jim Jordan didn't know about the abuse. There's no way, he said, unless he's got dementia or something that he's got no recollection of what was going on at Ohio State. I have nothing but respect for this man. I love this man. But he knew, as far as I'm concerned. Jim Jordan, meanwhile, has apparently been possessed by the ghost of Queen Victoria.
We knew of no abuse, never heard of abuse. If we had, we would have reported it. If, in fact, there's problems, we want justice for the people who are victims, obviously. And as I said, we are happy to talk with the folks who are doing the investigation. But the things they said about me were just flat out not true.
There's only one problem with that, about being the whole being, we will be happy to talk.
We did not know about anyone's winkies being grabbed. We did not know about any Balchinianism. We were completely unaware. We didn't know, we didn't do it, and even if we knew, we were only following orders. We.
Hey, now, so investigators looking into this on behalf of the Ohio State University. And, well, interviewed by the Columbus Dispatch, they said that they've tried and tried to get Jim Jordan to talk to them, only they, and I guess, you know, pronouns no longer have any actual provenance. The investigators, they got no response from them, Jim Jordan.
We.
Now, yesterday, President Harangatang said of the people who've come forward and to talk about what Dr. Strauss did to them. I guess he believes Dr. Strauss too, but Dr. Strauss is dead. He said, "I don't believe them at all. Jim Jordan is one of the most outstanding people I've met since I've been in Washington, and I believe him 100%. Said the guy who confessed to grabbing women by their genitals without their consent. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Jim Jordan has since has also said that we are being bullied by Michael DeSabato. He even called the Capitol Police on DeSabato because DeSabato had been emailing him, asking him to please speak out, and asking him to speak out in the mind of, you know, these Freedom Caucus types, your Steve Kings and your Louis Asparagus Gohmerts and your Jim Singlet Jordans. They talk a big game. They talk tough. But if you ask them to do the right thing and acknowledge that you at least heard about the abuse by the team doctor, well, suddenly they're being bullied. We're being bullied. We don't like it. We are afraid. We have called the cops. We're bullied. Unless you think that this is sort of a nothing burger of a story, I'd like for us to take a moment to consider how difficult it is when a woman is sexually assaulted, sexually abused. The data are legion of the number of women who endure sexual abuse and sexual assault and do nothing about it because they're afraid, because they know what a hell they'll be put through, and they know for instance that the police tend to look with a jaundiced eye upon allegations of sexual abuse and sexual assault. One young woman at the University of Alabama was driven to suicide because a powerful donor down there had finagled the system to make sure that she was not believed. And those kinds of stories are not isolated incidents. Well, knowing how difficult it is in those circumstances, and knowing that the numbers for men receiving sexual abuse from other men are probably, or males, whatever, are probably at least equally underreported. And knowing the stigma that attaches within male sexuality, I can't help but think that it was brutally difficult for Mr. DeSabato to step forward. And now, by their own estimates, well, DeSabato said to the legal counsel to Ohio State, Strauss sexually assaulted male athletes in at least 15 varsity sports during his employment at OSU from 1978 through 1998. Based on testimony from victim athletes from each of the aforementioned varsity sports, we estimate that Strauss sexually assaulted and/or raped a minimum of 1,500 to 2,000 athletes at the Ohio State University from 1978 through 1998. Let's use a conservative estimate. Let's use that 1,500 number divided by 20. That's 75 rapes per year. That's 1.44 rapes per week. This guy was raping or sexually abusing at least one young man per week for 20 years. If you have a weak stomach, do not go looking around the interweb tubes for white wing maggot responses to this story. Without going into graphic detail, I will simply tell you that it is ugly, it is vile, it is nasty, it is filthy, and it is entirely predictable considering that it's coming from the maggots with all of their good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian love. And consider that, yes, from 1978 to 1998, he's raping at least one young man a week. And even the ones who worked up the courage to say this shouldn't happen were ignored. Dr. Strauss died peacefully in 2005. He didn't die behind fucking bars. He led a lifetime of rape and paid no price for it. And as some of the athletes point out from the wrestling team, Jim Jordan himself said at least one occasion, if he ever touches me, I'll kill him. You know, that's the same kind of tough talk that we get from Jim Jordan there of the Freedom Caucus in the House of Representatives. Tried to get all tough with Rod Rosenstein and got his freedom handed to him. Rosenstein made a mockery of him and made the audience watching the hearings laugh at Jim Jordan. Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. I think it's time for Jimmy Boy Jordan to resign. Question is, will Kirsten Gillibrand and Kamala Harris and Amy Klobuchar et al. Demand his resignation? So far, crickets. Let's see how long it takes. Well, you know, he's a Republican, and they're not responsible for Republicans. They only run potentially dangerous Democrats out of the Senate. But that's a good observation, Darlene. Thank you. Coming from Billable Rick, President Harangutan. Bob. Steve has coined a moniker for our dear leader to end all monikers. I am speechless. What is Steve's secret? It's the power of fraternity. Yes, it is. Jack in Shreveport. Trump names, etc. How about Sophocles? Ooh. How about Spyrocletus? And, you got, I don't know if it's the July heat or something that's got your brain juices flowing more freely, but man, you're working good tonight. This particular from Jack in Shreveport. How about Jim Shower Jordan? Get it? Jim Shower? Meanwhile, a question coming in from Steve in New York. When revelations like this, and it's a woman or women, the first reaction is to say, why now? Why did she wait so long? I haven't heard anything like that here. You can also bet if it had been a Democrat, we would be hearing, see how the gays are? It's not safe to take a shower at the Ohio State University. Oh, you can bet on it. But don't jump quite so quick, Steve, because we're an eyelash away from what was he wearing. And did he ask for it? But the fact of the matter is, this is a classic example of unequal positioning, unequal power dynamics that is typical of many sexual abuse situations. You've got athletes who are, for the most part, on scholarship, and that scholarship can go away in a hurry. And Dr. Diddle there, Dr. Rape, well, he might just sign a piece of paper that says that you're out for the season and you can't do anything about it. I have not gone and looked. Is anyone using the Me Too hashtag to describe this nightmare of one rape, 1.4 rapes per day, every day for 20 years within the varsity athletics department at the University of at the Ohio State University? Has anybody done that yet? If so, I haven't seen it. So it's about 7 p.m. here. That
that's pretty much the filibobster, or at least some portion of it for the evening. It's time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable over on Skype. If you would like to participate, you are welcome to. Once again, all you got to do is send a contact request, if you haven't before, to SparkyDunk, SparkyDunk, SparkyDunk on Skype, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail. We have a grand time in the Friday on the Front Porch group, and all are welcome. Oh, by the way, Asa informs me that, for the record, Mr. Superbeats vehemently disagrees with me. I can't imagine him singling me out, or with anyone calling the chlamydia Claudius any name other than Trump. He says it is not constructive. Fuck constructive. You can't be constructive with a pyromaniac. Oh, hey, maybe we could get you a job on a furnace. No. There's nothing to be constructive about with these thugs. I go back to that graphic from the late, great Bart Cop. You cannot negotiate with a snarling dog. Kumbaya, my lord. Kumbaya. Yeah, bullshit. So, let's get the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable fired up. And see where the conversation takes us. Just looking for something to. And now. Hey, kind of. Yeah, I don't know. Song's not. I don't know. What do you. I already did the moving to Montana thing, so that's kind of. Done. So we'll see. We'll see where the conversation takes us. I'm just going to jump straight to the. To the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Oh, by the way, like I said, we got $480 to raise this evening. Thus far, through the first hour, we are at zero. Steve in New York says, what they were wearing? I don't think it'll get there, Bob. That would assume that Jordan actually wanted it. I'm waiting on Jordan et al. To accuse the students of raping them. Well, we've already gotten to bullying. How far can it actually be? All right, let's go ahead and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and check in with Sparky. The bucket cooler's working fabulously, is it, Sparky?
Yeah, I got a new fan running it.
Oh, very nice.
It's a USB fan. It's nice and quiet.
Excellent. So, how brutal is it in the man cave today?
Oh, it isn't that brutal. I just made it today. It was only 89 today. It was a weird morning.
Oh, it's downright tolerable in here. I actually had to put clothes on this evening. It's 71 degrees here in the Fabulous Horn Studios.
Oh, God. You guys have it easy. How you doing?
Hey, Billable Rick. What's happening, man?
Well, I have a weather report. We have an extreme heat warning in place here for L.A. County for the mostly for the most of the weekend. As I was driving in today, it was 117 degrees in Sherman Oaks, California. No shitting.
Jesus.
It was 106 where I lived when I took off. And this is at like 11:30 in the morning. So,
you know, there's an obligation upon me to ask, but is it a dry heat?
Yes. Actually, now that you mention it, it is a dry heat. Me being a stubborn German decided I was going to go for my morning walk at about 10 in the morning. I thought it was maybe 90 degrees out, but I suspect it was more like 100 when I walked. And boy, you know how fly balls carry in the heat? You kind of walk fast in the heat just because you want to get it over with, you know?
Yeah, the fly balls want to get out of the park in a hurry, too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, I thought it was 90. It must have been 100 because by the time I left for work, it was 106. So it's like, oh, wow, you know? And I was wondering why nobody else was on the street walking. So I basically walked from sunshine to shade. I found as much shade as I could as I went along. But boy, it's gonna be crazy this weekend. I'm actually gonna see a concert on Saturday at Dodger Stadium, Dead and Company, which should be pretty good.
Well, I was gonna ask you about last week's shows, but I wanted that in heat like this. Here's an unpaid product placement.
Okay.
The Columbia Sportswear Company they've got this Omni Shade. These are synthetic fabrics that breathe real well, and they wick and they cool. Well, they've added another fabric to their lineup called Omni Freeze, and it's really fascinating. When you sweat and sweat strikes that fabric, the fabric actually turns cold.
Interesting.
And they make T-shirts out of it. And in 106 or 117 degrees, I can see where that would be real, real handy.
Yeah, that'll be real handy. I've gotten a weather forecast for tomorrow at like 7 p.m. when the concert starts at Dodger Stadium. It'll be like between 88 and 90 is my guess. Maybe even 92 when the show starts. So I made sure I got seats in the shade. That can help a lot because I've seen concerts. I saw the Classic West last year there, and I was in the sun during the early shows, and that got awfully hot.
Well, five to seven or so. From the Department of Suffer Quietly, Laurel reminds us that on June 28th, Kuryat, Oman, dropped. The low temperature reached 109. The low.
Right. Yeah, I heard about that.
But if you just go to the Columbia website, Columbia.com, I think it is.
Yeah.
One of their T-shirts, they've got it on sale for it's like $29. You can only get it in that sort of neon lime green or a sort of crimson tide red. But it's made made entirely of that Omni-Freeze fabric. And they even make just shirt sleeves, just stretchy shirt sleeves that you pull over your arms that are of the same fabric. But it's pretty decent stuff.
I could use like a sweatband. That would be cool to have an Omni-Freeze sweatband, you know?
Well, they've got like neck gaiters and stuff made out of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Whoa. That sounds good. I'll have to look into that. It's a company
again,
called...
another helpful, handy, unpaid product placement, courtesy of the Horn.
Yes. And that's made by who? Bob? The Omni-Freeze?
Columbia.
Oh, Columbia.
Yeah.
Oh, like Columbia Apparel. Okay.
Yes, Columbia.com.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Awesome.
Columbia.
Yeah. That sounds great. Well, I could tell you more about the concerts. Maybe we can get some other people involved here first.
Definitely need a show report. Well, let's run and check in with Megan. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Bob.
Welcome aboard. Glad to hear from you.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been kind of a frustrating day?
Well, I mean, every day since January 20th, 2017, sure, but anything in particular?
Where do you want me to start? Because I live in a blue state, but in a red county, and I have marched in parades for my congresswoman last year and this year, so that's at least three times. And in certain places now, keep in mind my congresswoman is the first black woman elected in our state. Certain places that I've marched with her, let's just say that there's a certain group of people who are of Caucasian descent that will not meet my eye, will look straight down on the floor, look very grim when we're marching past. It's a little disheartening. And this past fourth, it was not only they wouldn't meet our eye, but there was one woman in particular that was wearing a t-shirt with President Trump dressed as Uncle Sam, and the t-shirt literally said, "Make Independence Day Great Again."
Yeah, Jesus.
Do you have a radio going?
So, I mean, this is like, I'm coming out in support of my congresswoman because I kind of feel like it's been especially important the last 2 years, but to just be in a march, and it's a sizable group with our congresswoman. So it's not like she isn't popular, but you see this literally while marching in a parade, and I'm just like, you can't even react to it. But inside, I'm just like, seriously, WTF.
Do you have the show running on another device?
Me? No.
Yeah, hearing an echo.
Yeah, I'm hearing a distant echo too, but I don't think it's Megan because she's not lighting up when it. I don't know. It could just be Skype. So Megan, these. Strange Caucasian folks in are they fond of white sheets, or do they like black and odd geometric symbols?
Oh, they're fond of the states' rights flag, if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh dear.
Yeah, that.
The urine colored snake flag, you mean?
No, the devil's diaper.
Oh, the devil's diaper. Okay, I got it. All right.
that flag. And one time, I think it was this past Memorial Day, we literally had the Air Force march behind us. Man, they went crazy for them.
So that was you said in today in particular had you sort of ready to chew nails and spit rivets. Anything else?
I'm just trying. I'm scratching my head over his rally last night in Montana, and every time I hear his speech, I can't make heads or tails of it. I literally can't understand. Like, what the heck is he talking about? Am I the only one that feels that way?
No. See, that's the problem here.
Oh, hell no.
Even the maggots don't know, Megan. They just like it. Whatever hateful shit vomits out of his mouth, they just clap. They're just there for the confirmation bias. But I mean, I read that in the Second Civil War letters segment at the beginning of the program. Yeah, I read the Elton John passage from last night, and what the actual did that? I mean, even Sarah fucking Palin is sitting there going, "What the hell did he say?" And that was one of the more coherent passages. That's why I'm predicting that at some point he just starts taking his clothes off.
Kind of makes you want to eat dirt and run rabbits, as you say, Bob, right?
Oh, God.
Oh, the horror. But my God, I mean, because, see, and anybody who's dealt with, and I'm not laughing, because it wasn't funny then, and it isn't funny now, but there's no sense being embarrassed about it, because it's just human behavior. But when my grandmother was sliding into, she wasn't sliding. She had slid safely into dementia home. My mom and dad were traveling with her, and they stopped at a rest area. And she wasn't that sprightly, but before they could get out of the car to help her, she had managed to climb down out of the van and, you know, just hiked her skirts up and took a pee in the parking lot. And again, you don't do it, you don't say it for humor purposes, but these are the things that come with dementia. And that man is deep in it. And so whether he plays with himself on stage or undresses or, you know, golden showers the audience, who knows? But it's coming, Megan.
So I'm not the only one thinking he is, there's something seriously wrong between the ears. And I don't just mean, you know, personality disorder. I mean, something is rotting his brain.
Well, I mean,
I don't know when or...
Well, I mean, if you've listened to this program for a while, you know that I mean, it's not a joke. I mean, I talk about the spirochetes and everything. I am firmly convinced that he picked up a dose of untreated syphilis during his sexual Vietnam of the 1990s, and he is deep into tertiary neurosyphilis.
He's Usarian crazy, Bob.
You mean Catch 22 Usarian crazy?
He's crazy.
You know, but there was a degree of sense. I mean, you know, it was Catch 22 that was crazy. Usarian was arguably sane. Everybody was.
Catch 22 pushed him over the edge. So.
Everybody was trying to kill him.
Yep.
The Germans were shooting at him, and the Americans were sending him up in planes to get shot at. I mean, you know, that old Latin phrase. He is sui generis.
Or as Hank Hill eloquently put it, that boy ain't right.
That boy ain't right. No, absolutely not.
But yeah, that was some really disturbing shit to watch last night. If you could even make yourself sit through it.
Well, see, but we forget, because it's been overshadowed now, Steve. He wasn't okay at the Greenbrier in West Virginia either, talking about how you could bomb coal and not do anything to it, but you can ruin a pipeline with a bomb. The guy thinks that if you dropped an incendiary bomb on a pile of coal, it won't burn. You can do it in the rain. You can do it in the sleet. You can do it in the snow. It's indestructible. He said that.
If I may interject, everything always circles back to him. Everything is about him. Everything.
Yeah, without a doubt. And a note just came in, and I think this is a really, really trenchant observation. Darlene in Connecticut just said, that's what Mueller will eventually conclude. Trump is unfit to stand trial.
And then what? Will he go back to that amendment where we can just boot his ass out? I mean...
We can't. That all depends.
Right,
but,
right.
But see, Mike Pence is sitting there in the wings waiting for God to tell him that it's time. Because remember, Mike Pence hears voices that he's quite sure is the voice of God and Jesus. Maybe the Easter Bunny, who knows? but he hears religious voices. So when God tells him it's time, he'll write the letter. But there was a story the other day. Mike Pence's brother said that Mike's behavior around Trump is similar to the fawning, obsequious, docile behavior that he engaged in around their father, Mr. Pence. So that's a little bit, you know, creepy.
Well, I heard something interesting concerning the Supreme Court that I'd like to run by you, if you have a minute.
Let me see how many minutes we've got. We've got 99 minutes, so go ahead.
Well, I believe this is all constitutionally mandated. Congress, and it's going to take a hell of a lot of Democrats with 2/3 vote, can mandate how many people are necessary to sit on the Supreme Court, so they can nullify the last two and have them tossed out. Have you ever heard anything about that?
No, it's absolutely true. All you got to do is get it through the House, get it through the Senate, and get the president, he'll sign it.
Well, I'm always looking for the ray of hope, so.
I'd call that more of a Hail Mary, Steve.
Yeah, I guess so, Rick. You would probably know better than I, but. I mean, you got to have something to cling on to, you know.
Rick, what distinguishes that from FDR's court packing plan? FDR was just doing it on his own hook, right?
Yeah. He wanted to expand it to, 13 or something, I think.
There was no congressional action. That's why that got struck down, right?
Right.
Because
right.
It's absolutely within the province of the Congress to establish the number of justices on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's gone up and down over the years. I mean, in the early years of the Republic, I think there were only maybe
five.
Seven,
there were five, then there were six, then there were seven, back to six, and then up to nine, and we stayed at nine.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not a magic thing. I guess he didn't run it by the Democratic caucus. He just, you know, maybe he was being too imperious, let's just say, you know, who knows. But he, you know, the pushback came from within his own party. And the Republicans, of course, but, you know, you need your party has to be unified.
Right, and largely because he had usurped a congressional prerogative.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the short answer to Steve's question is that it would be perfectly legal, perfectly constitutional, and could be done. And frankly, John Roberts couldn't do a damn thing about it. Now he'd still get to be Chief Justice.
Right. So you know, my impression though is once you become a judge, you're there for life, and I don't think it can be undone.
Short of impeachment, no.
Short of impeachment, so. Steve is talking about reducing the Supreme Court, the size of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, increase the size of the Supreme Court and let John Roberts
correct.
Pound sand.
Oh, increase. Yes.
Decrease, and that would mean the last two that were appointed, they would just be sanarid, you know.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Did I misunderstand you? You were talking about decreasing?
Yes.
No.
No, you can't do that.
No.
Not short of impeachment.
You would have to grandfather them in. Okay, they exist.
So that would mean that the next two justices who resigned or retired or died would take it down to seven, and there would be your court of seven, and that would be a right-wing nightmare.
So you just couldn't have a 2/3 constitutional amendment say, look, we only want seven, the last two that were appointed... See ya, you know.
No,
you can't
no,
do that.
No, because okay. Among other things, you know, they get a salary.
Well, that would be the hell out of here.
Because a federal civil servant, of which, you know, justices are a part, the law is very clear that they have a vested property right in their salary.
Well, I'll tell you where I got a whiff of this. Hartman had some professor on here.
Oh,
he was
for Christ's sake. Sorry.
I know. I just wanted to consider the source, you know.
Another,
I get bored during the days, you know, working all day, so I got to listen to something.
Another thing, Steve, is that I believe there's a constitutional provision in Article 3 that basically says that the pay of judges cannot be reduced during their term.
Right. Well, we could still pay them. They just wouldn't have a vote. That's what I was hoping, you know.
Yeah, well.
Hope springs eternal. So that's never, ever going to happen then.
No.
It can't. It would be an unconstitutional taking without due process of law.
Yeah.
Because there's one process for removing a Supreme Court justice from the bench, and that's impeachment.
Right. Has it ever been done?
Yeah, it's been done.
Wait a minute. There's no way for Gorsuch to get recalled if, in fact, the whole Russian thing
absolutely not
plays out that...
No, there's a way, Megan. It's called impeachment.
And when was the last time it was done, Bob, if I may scratch your historian brain?
Alcee Hastings of Florida...
Yeah.
Was a federal U.S. district judge, and they impeached him and removed him from office, and he promptly ran for Congress and won.
No, I'm talking SCOTUS-wise.
There was Justice Chase was, I believe, an impeachment effort was tried against him. He might have been impeached, but I don't think he was removed.
He was not removed, and in point of fact, there was an eloquent address given, if I'm thinking about the same case, a very eloquent address given by the president of the Senate at the time, a man by the name of Aaron Burr.
Yeah, I believe it was Salmon P. Chase or something like that. I think he was of the famous Chase family, the banking family.
No. That's kind of a misnomer.
Oh, really?
Now you got me curious here.
Look into it.
Salmon P. Chase.
Is there any way to block current nominees by saying that Donald Trump is still under investigation for the Russia thing?
That's a good question.
Yeah, shut down the Senate. That means that all four Democrats, all four mugwumps, have to stay together with the Democratic caucus, and they got to get a couple of Republicans to come over and say they're going to caucus with the Democrats, and at that point in time, Mitch can't get a quorum, and the Senate can't do any business.
Well, what if the Democrats just hightailed it, and then he wouldn't have a quorum? Or could they call the Justice of Arms to go round them up?
No.
For derelicts of duty.
No. That doesn't work the way that. No, the quorum rules. Mm-mm.
I also heard a suggestion about the Senate just leaving, and going out of town so that there can't be a quorum.
I realize we're grasping straws here, but what else do we
got? That works in some state legislatures, but it's my understanding, based on the quorum rules of the Senate of the United States, that won't fly.
I think all you need is 50 senators.
Yeah, you got 50. You got 50 senators. You can do business.
Right.
So that's but what happens? The more effective means is get those two Republicans to come over. Then you've got Mitch McConnell by the short and curlies, and he's not even Senate Majority Leader anymore. And they can it's like the Senate going on strike. Now, as to Salmon P. Chase, he had been an official of the Lincoln administration. And Lincoln appointed him to the Supreme Court of the United States to get him out of his hair. He actually replaced Roger Taney,
okay,
of Dred Scott fame, who only died in 1864. The case I was thinking about, let me see if I can find it. Judicial.
It was close to 1800, I think. Right?
Yeah.
When the Federalists were fighting with the Whigs.
But by the way, Chase's name was merely appended to the name of that bank. His was not a banking family.
Oh, okay.
It was they did that as an honor because Salmon P. Chase was the man who introduced the federal government to the idea of operating on debt, which got these banking houses massively wealthy and at the same time provided the necessary capital for the Union to be able to prosecute the Civil War.
Okay. Thank God for deficit financing, right?
Well, and that's and again, that's why you see the boom in building. You know, if you've ever wandered around behind, like the Supreme Court, back you know behind the Capitol on Capitol Hill, there was an absolute boom in the years after the Civil War in construction back there, and that's the rise of the debt-driven state and the rise of the administrative state.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which Trump was
okay, there, and there's our clarification. Samuel Chase.
Ah, Samuel, not Salmon. Okay. I knew it was a Chase.
Yeah, we can we wander off into the weeds sometimes, but this is actually kind of important.
So it can be done, but you almost have to have pictures of a SCOTUS with a farm animal or something to pull it off. I mean, realistically speaking, correct?
Yeah, well, see, this was a case of pure politics. It was Jefferson's faction going after the Federalists who were sitting on the court. And they accused Samuel Chase of engaging in bias. And Jefferson let it be known that he wanted him removed from office. So the House of Representatives impeached him on 8 articles of impeachment, all based on political bias. And then the Senate turned around and acquitted him on all counts. And he stayed on the court until 1811 and said, you know, suck it, Tom.
Wasn't he, like, related to Tom Jefferson somehow? Or no, I'm thinking of Marshall was.
Yeah, actually. That's Thomas. Yeah, and they hated each other.
Yeah.
John okay. Marshall.
Yeah.
John Marshall, in fact, was the one who pretty much kept Aaron Burr's neck out of a noose when Thomas Jefferson did everything he could to get him hanged for crossing him on pretty sketchy damned evidence.
Megan was asking a question in the chat room. Does the SCOTUS number have to be an odd number? And that's a good question.
The Constitution is silent
mm-hmm.
as to the number of justices, and in point of fact, in within the history of the United States, there was a time when the number of justices was at 6, and they figured out real quick that that was unworkable because everything just turns into a tie, and a tie is no answer. You want judicially, you really kind of need a winner or a loser, because otherwise the issue goes unresolved.
It reverts back to the previous ruling.
Right. Yeah, the lower court ruling stands, whatever that is. And there's no national law created, essentially. There's no uniform law that's effective throughout
right. the country. Right, and in essence, the Supreme Court is not supreme.
Right.
But you were saying, Megan?
So there's no one to break a tie vote in this, if the SCOTUS has... like an even, like in the Senate, where the vice president breaks a tie?
No, there's no tiebreaker. That's why you have the odd number.
It reverts back to the lower court ruling.
Oh boy.
Yeah, the tie.
So like I said,
the tie goes to the winner below.
Oh boy.
So let's say the plaintiff prevails in the district court, and then the defendant wins the appeal on the circuit court level, and the plaintiff then appeals to the Supreme Court. If it's a tie, the decision goes to the appellate court winner, in this case, in that example, the defendant.
That's what we had the majority of 2016.
Right. There were 8 people on the court for a while, and there were some tie goes to the winner. Cases. It was a 4-4. It was an 8-member court, and there was a 4-4 tie.
Yeah, in fact, the 4-4 tie kept alive the what are those called? The payments for non-union members, the fair share payments that non-union members are required to pay And that the original case arose under California law. And this asshole out of Illinois named Janice, they got him, you know, to go along with the case as a plaintiff. And that's what came to the Supreme Court most recently.
Right.
Because, and basically sunsetted the unions, the public sector unions.
Right. And they, for all intents and purposes, the Supreme Court gave the right winger, the little right wing asshole, another bite of the apple.
Right. Right. Because it was 4-4 before. And that was the circuit decision was in favor of the state of California, which left intact Abood, which allows for fair share payments of non-union members for services related to collective bargaining and, you know, conditions of employment, that sort of thing, the non-political stuff that unions do. And the Supreme Court decision in Janus is just gobbledygook in terms of, you know, it violates a person's First Amendment right to have to make these fair share payments. I mean, come on, you know, before you know it, you know, that'll be a justification not to have to pay your, you know, vehicle registration payments or whatever. Who knows, you know?
That's kind of terrifying. Well, let's move around the room a little bit. We've heard from everybody except John. Hey, John Bridevo is with us again this evening. Thank you, John, for popping by. No, Irwin's with us.
Yeah, John's not here yet.
Oh, okay. I thought I saw him earlier, but Irwin.
I added him because I talked to him earlier. I thought he was going to be here.
Yeah, I really have quite a lot to talk about tonight. Of course,
spill it.
Trump was not too far from me last night. I wasn't there, of course, but he chose Great Falls. Now, Great Falls is a lot more conservative. If he would have come to Missoula, there had been a lot of protesting going on because this is kind of the hub of...
Well, there were even protesters at Great Falls.
Yeah, I know. In fact, my cousin was there and showed a picture of one of the protesters, which one of her friends. So there's protesters everywhere. That's true. But anyway, as... One thing about that I wanted to bring up tonight about this part of the country. Now, I've lived in North Dakota and Montana most of my life, about 40 years between the two. And area-wise, if you put Montana and North Dakota together, it's bigger than California in area. But Montana has a million people. North Dakota has a quarter of a million people. But we do have the four senators and two representatives from the two states. But one thing I want to bring up is there's a lot of natural resources here, especially in western Montana. The Coke industries, there's a 400,000 acre ranch in Montana. Ted Turner has about 150,000 acres of ranch in Montana, but he only raises bison on his ranches. But the Koch brothers, I think they raise cattle, but they don't allow hunting, while Ted Turner actually allows hunting on his ranches. So, and that's a big thorn in the side of a lot of people, is when Ted Turner came in and bought up his ranch here. And nobody could hunt, but he has turned that around. He allows hunting there now. But Koch brothers have also, like the college I went to, Montana State, they have given, I think, $8 million some kind of funding to Montana State, like they've done all over the country. If you go to the Koch brother or the Koch Industries website, they own... I'm thinking of the paper company, the large paper company, makes Dixie cups. Georgia Pacific, they own that. They own mineral companies, mining companies. They own pipeline companies. And it's obvious to me what's going on here with them. And you know, I've heard that David, or one of the Kochs, was with Trump the night of the election. I think they have a big, I think they have a lot of say in what's going on in the country. That's, I guess that's the main thing I wanted to say. And also about, we had the demonstration last week here. And one of the gals that that helped organize it, there's 60,000 people in this in the city, and there was about 700 people at the demonstration. But she's from originally from Zimbabwe, which was Rhodesia. And in 1980, they had there was a teacher there who was became a leader and got their independence. I'm not sure from who. But he turned into a dictator, and Mugabe, I think, is his name.
Mugabe,
yeah.
Robert Mugabe.
And she said this was just like watching a movie again to her, and so she's really been freaked out about since he's come on stage about him, because he reminds her so much of this Mugabe guy. So, but that's, those are the main, and just one more thing, Trump went and talked about, Pocahontas. To me, I think this is kind of a Southern strategy, Montana style, because, Native Americans here, there's 8 Indian reservations here. There's 6 Indian reservations in North Dakota. There's a lot of land in the Indian reservations. And there is a lot, there's people up here really don't like Native Americans very much. There's prejudice. And I think there was a lot of emphasis on the Me Too comment, but I think the main thing about the Pocahontas is a kind of a Southern strategy. At least that's my take on it. I may not agree, but
well, no, I think you're right, Irwin. Because back when my friends up in northern Wisconsin were opposing a giant mountaintop removal disaster in the Pinocchio Hills, a cursory glance at the comments section of various websites would reveal a whole shit pot full of, I guess we'd call them proto maggots because this was pre-Trump, hooting and screeching and hollering about the Indians who were stopping us from having jobs, and how they wanted to keep economic development from happening in Wisconsin, and so the bigotry that played out in that issue was plain to see. And you know what, I was so proud to be considered their friend, because they were like, fuck it, don't care, be no mine. And you know what, they stopped it.
Yeah.
But well, you're right. There's a lot of anti-indigenous white bigotry in the states that have that have indigenous populations.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Another thing about Trump is that when he was trying to run a casino in Atlantic City, there was a casino in Connecticut that was competing against him. And he went to Congress, actually, and was trying to say that some of them didn't look like Indians and they shouldn't be able to do this and that. So I think there's a YouTube you can actually watch that. So he dislikes Indians too, or Native Americans too, personally. I think he holds a grudge real bad, and I think he holds a grudge against them.
Well, he's a straight-up white supremacist, okay?
Yeah.
He's the son of a Klansman.
Yeah.
Probably like to do away with Indian casinos.
I think he actually tried at one point. I think it had something to do with the tax-free status or the fact that they were given preference to start casinos or something to that effect. I wasn't real clear. I mean, it was a while back, but it had such, because they were competing directly with his casinos at one point.
Yeah, and of course, at the same time, he was running that aforementioned casino into the ground. And so we ask again the question of the ages, what kind of a fuck-up do you have to be to have a casino and go broke? I mean, Jesus, it's not an exaggeration to say the house always wins. Every game is geared toward the house. The only game in the house that you can get even remotely close to even odds is blackjack. Everything else, the odds are ridiculously stacked in favor of the house.
And even blackjack, they got a one up.
Yeah.
Well, even more so when he brags he doesn't pay income taxes and he stiffs people so he doesn't pay his bills. So that just makes it even worse.
It absolutely does. I just had a question come in from Brother Deacon Asa. Bob, can you draw any parallels between what the Claudius regime is doing to the SCOTUS and both Duterte in the Philippines and Duda in Poland recently giving the boot to their respective Supreme Court justices? Well, it's not just the Supreme Court justice in Poland. It's a significant portion of the entire court. And in both of those cases, they're purges. They have to get rid of people on their court and in their court system who still hold to ideas of classical European liberal democracy. Not like liberal versus conservative in the United States, but what's understood as liberal democracy. And the same goes for Duterte. What Trump hopes to do relative to the Supreme Court is to get himself, you know, 5-4 will be good, but 6-3 would be better, 7-2 would be awesome. And that miserable punk, to the extent that he prays and he doesn't, what he wants is, so far he got to replace Fat Tony Scalia and Anthony Kennedy. He wants to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg or Stephen Breyer, because that would be real victory. Replacing one of those would give him 6-3. Replacing two would give him 7-2. And Kagan and Sotomayor would have no choice but to just sit there and take it, which is how he likes his women. So, you know, it's the same principle running in an opposite direction. Trump needs more justices, not fewer. Duterte and Duda need to cripple their entire judicial system so that they can accomplish their fascist right-wing goals.
And that's exactly why I'm not giving the likes of Max Boot, Bill Kristol, George Will, Steve Schmidt, or any other of these fuckers a pass, because they've had an epiphany. Fuck that. I hope this haunts their dying fucking breaths, what they've done to this country, man, because they are complicit and they are culpable.
Well, yeah, and it's not like they were out there pointing out any problems. Yeah, their problem is Trump. Their problem is Trump has taken their ideas to their logical extreme, or illogical extreme, this isn't praise, but he has exposed Republican policy for exactly how nasty and vile it is. And the Schmidts and the Wills and the Boots and so forth don't like that. They liked their conservatism genteel and salon parlor style, in which engage in conversations and not hate each other or anything, but just win and fuck people. You know, like Charles Krauthammer. And that's bullshit.
It,
I mean,
it's too late for that. They were complicit in this Iraq bullshit. They all have blood on their hands from people all over the region. Innocent people being slaughtered in these death machines. They're all complicit in this. And we cannot, as good progressives, and I don't mean good, that's a terrible word, but as progressives, we cannot let them off the hook for this shit. We have to make them own it.
Right. It's like something that I think Driftglass posted on Twitter a couple of weeks back. Fine. Let them be never Trump, but they have to walk through the streets with their heads shaved first. And I understand that sentiment. They've been toxic all along. It's like Joe Scarborough engaging in his Reagan hagiography, and you know the shit that Trump said about George H.W. Bush last night was scurrilous. But we also have to remember that the George H.W. Bush presidency was not exactly a beacon of freedom to the world. You know, he talked about, Scarborough talked about how what a decent man George H.W. Bush was and how wonderful Reagan was. And I'm sitting there thinking, I wonder how wonderful Bishop Romero thought Reagan was. And Bush was, when he was being murdered by a right-wing death squad that was funded and equipped and supported by the Reagan administration. You know, I wonder how those raped nuns felt about what a great and good man Ronald Reagan was, and George Bush were.
Or the nuns that were thrown out of the helicopters as well.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because that the dirty war that was waged in Nicaragua and in El Salvador was... any other country would have been accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity. But we were to... But we, you know, we're the bully on the block and we can't be challenged.
And that has destabilized the entire, you know, area of Central America for the last 35 years. And that's why they have the problem with crime... And the, you know, the M13, M18, you MS-13. Know, those gangs and so
MS-13
forth, you know?
Was born in L.A., though, Rick. It wasn't born south of the border.
I think it was 18 that was born. Maybe not. Yeah, maybe it was born in L.A., actually, on second thought. There was another one, I think.
The cartels exist largely because of the drug prohibition in this country.
Right. Yeah.
Well, Reagan kicked off the downward spiral, and you could probably even trace the trail further back to them, back to him, further back than Reagan. But when the wheels came off the wagon was the 2000 election, and I don't know if we're ever going to recover from that.
It'll be multi-generational if we do. It's probably not going to be in our lifetimes. Maybe in our lifetimes we can see a clawback and a struggle back to something, but... the odds of ever getting back to the Roosevelt, Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy era of prosperity and a vibrant, muscular middle class, no. That's gonna be something for my grandchildren to maybe hope that their children can achieve. And again, I'm not trying to be a little ray of sunshine. But
you're speaking truth, man.
You gotta address reality. It's like the business. It's like finding out that this 2-bit tin horn dictator wanted to have him get his war on in Venezuela. I mean, the first inclination is to look at that and go, God damn, really? But yeah, really, because that's who he is. And.
What was his reasoning for war with Venezuela?
Because Venezuela is destabilized and because Trump. And because America can fix it. And so he asks the leadership of Colombia and Brazil and Bolivia and Ecuador and Peru and Argentina, wouldn't it be good if we did that? And they all went, no. No. That'd be horrible. Terrible. Don't do it. Because there's not a country down there that doesn't have experience with having their government meddled and monkeyed with by the United States, and never to a good end. American meddling in Latin American politics has never had a good outcome, ever. And if you take just a second or so to ponder the refugee crisis that would immediately descend upon Peru, Ecuador, particularly Colombia, Brazil, you realize that no, it would be a human rights and human health, and well, it would be a disaster on a par with what's going on in Syria. And you want to talk about destabilizing a region? It would make the destabilization that came as a result of he tried to kill my daddy, fuck Saddam, we're taking him out, look like child's play. Because George W. Bush was a fuck-up. President Harangutan has gone pro.
Well, it's funny you mention that, Bob, because I recently read a book by Jack Devine called Good Hunting when he was a CIA agent. And in that book, he discussed when he was working for the CIA, he was down in, I believe it was Chile, in 1971, when they helped. He said they didn't assassinate President Allende, but that they helped the opposition, and what ended up happening was that it forced the military to take over the government and kicked off Pinochet's reign down there. And I was born in 1979, so this was a crash course in history for me, but I did not realize, they were trying to bolster the opposition to President Allende. I forget the exact specifics, but Allende either did he, I don't know if he resigned, got assassinated, but then Pinochet, the military, took over, and then it kicked off Pinochet's reign, and I guess for 12, 13 years, it was a dictatorship under Pinochet.
It was a bloodbath.
Allende was murdered by the people who did the coup on him. He did not survive that takeover, let's just say.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't remember the specifics of that. I don't know if he resigned, fled, or if he got assassinated.
There was extreme prejudice involved.
Yeah, yeah. And the CIA was largely responsible for undermining the economy of Chile, just like they're trying to do in Venezuela. And they've done in other countries to try to get regime change. The boys from Chicago then took over, Milton Friedman, et cetera, et al. And then they tried to create like a, libertarian paradise down there until the economy went, kaput. And then they had to have a bunch of state spending to kind of, reverse the effects at least. But yeah, it was a real bloodbath. I mean, they had entire soccer stadiums where people were rounded up and killed, and very, very gruesome.
Well, hey, all, I'm going to get out of here. I think Karen wants to go to the local fair in town. So if I'm going to get sick, I might as well have fun doing it,
Well, have fun, Steve. Have plenty of good.
Stay off the
craft beers.
Now hold on, Steve. Stay off the damn rides.
On the Budweiser.
Stay off the rides, man. Have you ever seen the people who put those things together?
Yeah, I know, but hell, we're just as safe on those rides as we are in Trump's world, Bob. What the hell, man?
Well, at least in Trump's world, you're on something that isn't moving. Well, it's kind of a pity that you are running off, because I've been sitting on a story that just before you go. I've been sitting on a story that came from our buddy Dennis in Kentucky, with whom.
All right, well, I can wait a few minutes. That's cool.
With whom we mow grass. No, I don't want to get Miss Karen mad at me.
No, no. Karen loves you, Bob. You can never make her mad at you, man.
But do you remember the Squatty Potty? I mean, we've run across products from time to time.
I do.
Squatty Potty. Is that for training young kids?
No.
No, it's for putting your feet up when you're on the toilet.
Tracy brought that one to us. And of course, Trumpy Bear. Well, we've got a new product here, and I'm not kidding. The Shiny Hiney. Actually, it's called My Shiny Hiney.
What?
Yes.
In the world.
Really. Think of it as an electric toothbrush for your taint.
What?
With an ergonomically designed wand and bristles of varying hardness.
And stimulation.
And it polishes your pucker.
Well, I'll be damned. I've seen everything now. Maybe I can win one at the carnival tonight.
They're battery operated because capitalism. They are battery operated. They're safe. They come with a grippy little thing that you put on the wall in your shower, and you just reach back there with your My Shiny Hiney, and you're Jesus. And for a little extra money, you can buy some butt bleaching top polish to use with your My Shiny Hiney.
If you don't stop now.
And we just didn't know we needed this item. That's all. You know, we have to. You know, capitalism has to tell us what we need because we just don't know what we need. You know.
Well, just
don't stop there if you act right now.
Yeah. Well, stand by for the audio.
There's nothing better than feeling clean and confident. But are you really as clean as you should be? Not unless you've taken care of a very personal area that requires special attention. Stop resorting to one of these options. Now there's a solution. It's My Shiny Hiney.
And by the way, just so you'll know, the model who's in the ad here apparently wears her false eyelashes into the shower and somehow manages not to get water on her smoky eyes or anything. But when she says, not if you're not taking care of one of those special places, and she makes a face like she just swallowed a mouthful of vinegar and looks over her shoulder. I mean, this is some good stuff, folks. I mean, God bless capitalism. Oh, where's Tracy when we need her?
A specialty cleansing brush with an ergonomically designed handle to easily access that difficult-to-reach spot. My Shiny Hiney comes in six...
I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm just gonna say, I've never found it that difficult to reach. might be unpleasant to reach.
Is there a video for that? Or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm watching it now. And it comes in black and white and blue and sort of a little lavender and pink and a kind of burgundy fuchsia.
Colors and includes a suction cup shower holder, so it's always right when you need it. The formed bristle brush is specially designed to reach every fold and wrinkle. Plus, there's a soft silicone brush for fingertip control.
Yeah, for fingertip control. It's a little.
Sent me one of those, Steve. I got some kind of package coming from Steve. I don't even know what it is.
No, this is before my time, man.
No, there's a little silicone finger condom with like little silicone brush bristles, you know, so that you can get the parts that the Shiny Hiney missed.
Squeaky clean.
When did washcloths go out of style?
Oh, this is, I mean, Dennis sent this to me, and I opened the email, and it just happened to be that part of the day where Agnes and I were winding down the madness, and I went, oh, honey, you gotta watch this. And when I mentioned it a minute ago, through the magic of, well, it ain't magic, just through the damn wall, I heard Agnes start laughing. Jack in Shreveport wants to know, Shiny Hiney, is it labeled with a warning for external use only?
Well, see, that's the problem, Jack. Once you see and you understand the shape of the brush, it's not for external use only. It's supposed to get in. I mean, they tell you, you get in there to all the cracks and folds. And they're not talking about the big crack.
Literally. My Shiny Hiney is especially handy if you have a limited range of motion due to age, injury, or stiffness. Good Great hygiene is the first defense against infections and
stiffness.
Against infections and good anal hygiene is the first defense against infections and disease. And so you get a scene of a woman sitting across a desk from a guy in a suit with a stethoscope hanging around his neck who reaches under his desk and hands the lady a nice shiny pink shiny hiney. And she looks at it sort of perplexed.
My Shiny Hiney puts unparalleled cleaning power right in your hand. Order My Shiny Hiney now for just $19.99 and
And so now the woman who was looking over her shoulder, like she had a mouth full of vinegar, well, she's happy now, and she's holding it up in front of her with the brush pointed at her face. I'm like, no, 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 it's not a toothbrush. Think of where it's been.
It's not a shiny face. It's a shiny honey.
Bob, I just made a donation. Call that Steve from Georgia Stan Shiny Honey Challenge, man.
God bless you, Steve. The Shiny Hiney Challenge is on the table. Steve's looking for somebody to match his $15. And
make Bob's program clean again.
I love you guys, man. I'm out.
All right. Please don't tell Miss Karen. Don't tell Miss Karen about this. I don't want her to know what a bunch of freaks
Hell,
we
gonna
are.
I'm going to tell on all of y'all. I'm going to tell on every one of you.
Hey, John.
I just came in and I said, what the hell did I stumble into? Shiny honey, what?
Oh, yeah. It ain't a Shiner Bock ad, John.
I'm telling you, it didn't sound like one.
But the next thing you know, in the ad, she's dancing around in a yellow, twirling in a yellow sundress. And I mean, I guess that shiny hiney does some work.
Experience the joy of feeling truly clean. And there's more. My Shiny Hiney Cleansing Cream, available in three fragrances, removes odors and impurities to leave you feeling fresh and smelling great all.
Yes, it removes odors and impurities, and it comes in citrus ginger. Oh, yes, it really, really does. And I can't tell you. Yeah, but we haven't gotten to the butt bleaching cream.
And for a brighter complexion, there's My Shiny Hiney Lightening Cream. The unique container dispenses the perfect dose of this gentle lightener, which quickly fades dark skin for a more even tone.
You know, of all the places on the human body that I've thought of in conjunction with the word complexion, I never got around to that.
Oh, never crossed my mind one time, Bub. I don't know who's crawling up somebody's butt, but I don't know what.
Well, the thing is, how do you, John? By the way, welcome John Bridevo from Blue Dot Nation. How do you get to the point? I mean, my wife and I have been married 25 years. You've been married a very long time. Sparky's been married a long time. How do you get to that point where you go, honey, do I need to bleach my butthole?
Yeah. I want to hear what happened right after you said that, too. You know.
You sick bastard, 25 years. Oh, my God, I don't even know who I'm married to anymore.
Honey, tell me the truth. What is it? Does this look all right? Is there a problem here, baby, I need to take care of her? What the hell?
Well, let's find out a little bit more about the gentle complexion lightening cream.
All ingredients in our products meet or exceed cosmetic quality standards and are made in the USA. Order now.
You know what they don't say? Never tested on animals.
Never tested on animals. You know why?
They get poor little rabbits.
Come here, little bunny.
Oh, my... I don't know. Maybe the bonobos would like it.
Lord have mercy.
Now and get My Shiny Hiney in your choice of color and texture, plus two extra brush heads, the fingertip brush, and shower holder, all for just $19.99.
Well, damn. Let's get
shower holder.
I bet Donnie's ordering a bunch of them for as many people as has to kiss his butt. And then he's maybe getting them for gifts. Here, hey, look, boss, what I got you.
John, you may have just landed on the on the secret of the maggots.
I believe so. I believe they're having truckloads of that stuff shipped to me. It's going to take truckloads.
And the thing is, it says on here, as seen on Ellen, and I'm like, there's no way I'm going to go and look up that episode of Ellen. No.
I don't recall that episode. I don't hear anybody talking about it. Did you see Ellen's butt? I missed that episode, I guess.
Oh, well, wait, a little
cat. I'm trying to wrap my brain around what kind of gynecologist appointment where a doctor hands me that tool after the examination.
Well, I think you're being a little sexist, Megan. Why couldn't it be a proctologist?
Or a urologist, okay.
Either way, I'm turning around and slapping the crap out of him.
Oh, by the way, Mrs. Schmendrick, I noticed while I was down there, you're looking a little, well, dark. You need to bleach that thing. Here, try the shiny hiney.
Yeah, don't come back until you do.
Well, thanks for nothing, Laurel. Laurel went out and found the shiny hiney YouTube. I ain't giving that URL out, but I will give out a cowbell to Laurel for noting that, hey, that's President Harangutang's new lip gloss.
I'm telling you, what did I find myself in here?
Irish Dave noting, and then the wife asked, does this shiny hiney make my ass look big? No, baby, but it could use a polish. Whack!
I said, you don't know what you're going to find on Bob's show. Last time we was talking about the Declaration of Independence Day. Today we're talking about butts.
Oh,
hey,
well,
Bob, look at this butt!
John, yeah, days we get into the gutter real quick and real easy.
I feel at home, buddy. I feel at home.
Lee in New York with some helpful hints. Never forget to label each for its own personal user. Lee says, the only time my hiney was of great importance to me was my colonoscopy. Well, did the doctor hand you? There's your gastroenterologist, Megan. See, looks at you and go, you know, I was down there, and I mean, you did okay with the cleanse, but you know, you really need to polish that thing and try the citrus ginger next time, for fuck's sake. Oh, God. Sometimes you got to have this stuff.
Well, Bob, I've never been in that position, I guess.
No, I'm not talking about that stuff. I'm talking about you got to lighten up the madness, especially after something like last night.
Oh, Lord, did you see him in Montana? That just...
I can't drink anymore. Do you have it? No, I mean, every time this shit comes on now, I feel like Alex in A Clockwork Orange with that little frame around my eyes, just with my eyelids just peeled open, and I can't turn away.
Can't turn away, can't look. 18x4 glossy photos, whatever that song was. Yes, sir, I remember Alice's restaurant. Yeah, that last night in Montana was one hell of a... You know, I wrote down this whole paragraph. I read it on my show this evening. And it just rambled on about how he was breaking records. He was better than Elton John. And Elton John has to use instruments and all that shit. And I just sitting there thinking, what I wanted to highlight on my show tonight, Bob, was those idiots that were sitting behind him, sitting there listening to all that dribble. And they're cheering that shit. And just how ignorant is that? And that's forever, for posterity. They're up there. It's on film. They'll relive that shit for history.
Yeah, look, Marveline, there we are. Look, that's when he was talking about not having an organ.
Yes. Did he mean a brain or
a
stomach?
Only one thinking
he didn't have a brain.
I'm sorry, Megan, go say what?
I said, is there the only one thinking he was talking about not a musical instrument?
Well, I think he was trying
something else.
I think he was trying to be clever.
He's got a fiction with the biggest in history of everything. You know, it doesn't matter to him what it is. He's the biggest, biggest, and all that.
The way I took it, we was talking about Elton John filling an arena. He could do it better with just his words.
Which is ironic because The reason he brought that up is because he knew he was talking to a half-empty arena that was all curtained off to make it look like a crowd.
Yes, sir. And if they spin them cameras around at any one of his rallies, you'd see the same thing. You know, it's not as grand as they're making it out. Nothing's as grand as he makes it out to be. You know, it's just...
Well, as John Goodman famously noted on Saturday Night Live playing Rex Tillerson, we are, after all, talking about a guy who sold meat through the mail.
That's true. And the people that bought it are through the mail. His followers. I'm telling you. It was sickening last night. But that he played all his favorite hits, you know, Lock Her Up, all that good stuff came out, you know. He was on a roll last night. They love him for that shit.
Well, thanks for taking one for a team. I can't stand watching him.
Well, with people like John and me, it's our freaking job. That's what I was going to say, John.
Yeah, that's what it is. And it gets tiring, don't it, Bob?
I'm not kidding, okay? I mean, I'm not going to meetings or anything. It's just because of my innards. I can't drink anymore. And it's not easy to just, I mean, because that shit starts and you go, yeah, come on, get just a beer. Just give me a beer. Just a really? Beer, please.
Yeah. Either how that or
bleach,
take...
How much bleach do you go through a week, Bob? A couple of gallons?
Oh, yeah, the showering with bleach. I got hair like Andy Warhol now from the bleach.
It kills it all, though. It gets it right down to the roots.
Ooh, it's like and the bleach isn't really working anymore. I may have to move to fucking Roundup.
you know what a good vision I saw off the internet today was Beto O'Rourke playing in Willie Nelson's
band.
Did you
see him last night? I was just ecstatic with him at Willie's 4th of July picnic, and Beto was up there playing his guitar on stage with Willie, and man,
that's awesome.
Oh, Willie Nelson and Beto O'Rourke. Hell, he's not only good for Texas, he's good for the United States. I swear, that guy he's the only politician I have seen in probably the last 30 or 40 years that I've actually gotten excited about. He takes no PAC money. He's out raising Ted Cruz now. He's on a roll. He's on CNN. He's on CBS. Every station that you can find him on, he's there.
And apparently,
he's like a rock star everywhere he goes with his rallies.
And apparently no slouch with an axe, right? I mean, he's actually a pretty decent guitar player.
Yes, he is. Yes, he used to be in a rock and roll band. I want to say heavy metal. I'm not sure exactly.
It was my understanding it was punk.
It might have been. And if you'd see him, you can just see the pictures of him with longer hair. And stuff. And so, yeah, he comes, his background is pretty interesting. And, you know, he's been a congressman out there in El Paso district for a long time now. And he's not afraid to speak his mind. He'll answer anybody's questions. He doesn't dodge the issues. He doesn't start dancing around trying to figure out something else to say. You know, he really does answer the questions the way he feels. And we're just so proud of him down here. Yeehaw and all that stuff.
Well, you know
he's
what?
Down,
and you
down
got
to earth.
You got a little bonus too, because I saw the other day that Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger eating future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time.
Sure.
He got popped by the Federal Election Commission.
Yes, I haven't read that. Damn it, I just seen the headline. That's it. You're going to have to tell me.
Well, I must have missed that one. What was going on?
Well, Rafaelito claimed that he self-funded a whole bunch of his last re-election campaign, 2012. And, you know, he actually had some decent opposition in that. So the Federal Election Commission was, get this, because remember, the Federal Election Commission is made up of Republicans and Democrats.
Oh, yes, bipartisan.
And they did something they almost never do. They issued a unanimous decision against Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz.
They all agreed. There you go. They all agreed that he mishandled $1.1 million in campaign loans from, wait for it, Goldman Sachs and Citigroup.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you like to do that? Wouldn't you like to mishandle that much money?
I think I might even get good at it after a while. I might mishandle it at first, but I could probably handle it real good with a little practice.
You'd have like a real life Gulfstream 5 and a Maybach in your garage, right, Bob?
Well,
and to help with Agnes.
Well, $1.1 million, we might be able to afford like a Subaru, so I don't have to rent a car every time I drive somewhere. But yeah, he mishandled. What he did is there was $1.1 million in campaign contributions from Goldman Sachs and Citigroup that he didn't want anybody to really know about. He didn't want it because, you know, he's an independent, staunch, moral conservative.
Oh, yeah. He does not. I don't take that kind of money.
Yeah, well, he did. And then he tried to say, no, those weren't loans. That was my own money. I found it in the alley. Some guy gave it to me.
I'm telling you, I call him a used car salesman. That's what he looks like. It's what he sounds like. He'll sell you anything, Ted Cruz. He's a slime ball. And that's one reason why Beto O'Rourke's really going to stomp his butt.
Well, yeah, and back in 2012, he said, I liquidated my own assets to fund this campaign. And no, it turned out he was using $1.1 million of Goldman Sachs and Citigroup's money. Oops.
He rolls over like a puppy. That's what he does. You know, you heard him all through the campaign there talking real bad up against Donnie. You know, puffing up on him and all that. And Donnie calls his wife ugly. His daddy's helped kill Kennedy and everything else. And he's going to stand up, vote your conscience. And then right after Donnie gets elected, he's up there bringing the boss a big thing of shiny.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. Trump didn't need no shiny hiney. I mean, have you seen the nose on Ted Cruz?
Yes, I have. It'll go right up in there, I'm telling you. Little point nose. It's like a proctologist without hands.
And it looks like it's already, and it looks like it's, and speaking of shiny, it looks like it's made of wax. Or it's pre-lubricated or something.
Yeah, it's pre-lubricated, all right. Slide right up Donnie's butt.
Well, he is a booger. He is a booger eater, after all.
Yes, he is. He can, he forgets where he is and just how long people down here in Texas have a memory for that shit. You know, you puff up on a man and you stand against him, well, you're going to stand against him. Not as soon as he wins, you're going to go suck up to him and try to find a job or some crap.
Well, let me ask you.
Truth has done.
You can be the Texan cultural correspondent for a minute if you
don't
mind, John.
That's me. That's me, buddy.
So I don't know how weak the stomach is. The stomachs are of your average Texas voters, but if you took that clip of him in that debate, slurping that booger, and just put it all
just play
over
that.
I mean, it would be worth the money you spent to do targeted advertising with that on Facebook.
Right there on his lip.
Yeah, and it it's gone. You know, he just slurps it right up.
It disappeared.
His throat. You got to wonder if that might have an impact on the electorate down there.
A lot of people talk about his booger eating event there. Now you see it. Now you don't. Gee, what happened, Margaret? I don't know.
Salty.
Yes, hors d'oeuvres. We didn't know we were getting them.
Ooh, just like oysters.
And there's a crunchy part. Raffaellito loves him some sinus oysters.
We are ruining someone else's evening dinner, right, Bob?
Well, let's see. It's 8:24 here in the Eastern time zone, so I'd say we're probably ruining dinner in the Pacific time zone about now. Maybe some late diners there in your Mountain time zone.
I don't eat till after the show.
You've learned. Yeah.
Sparky's been around a while.
Yeah, I have.
There you go. Me and Sparky was talking about the fine eating that we experienced in Southeast Asia over there, and when we were on the, were we at the end of the show last time there?
Yeah.
Sparky?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I asked him
after show.
That was the after show bullshit shot. Yep, that's us. We was talking about balut. Do you know what a balut is, there, Bob?
Yes. Yes. No, thank you.
Yeah, yeah, me neither. I don't care how many, I don't care how much San Miguel beer you try to suck down, is just not going to come with that balut. That egg ain't going. But I have seen a lot of sailors try it.
What is a balut?
Yeah.
It's a fine delicatessen served in the Philippines. Go ahead, Bob.
The way John explained it to me, it is a fertilized chicken's egg that has been allowed to partially develop, and then they like ferment it.
Yep. Oh, yuck. Dig it up out of the ground.
No, thanks.
Rinse the dirt off.
You know,
crack that shell and you will die.
You know, Tony Bourdain did a Philippines show. I wonder if he got around to one of those, because he wasn't afraid to eat disgusting things.
No, he you know, I can't remember if he ate a balut or not. I don't think it came up or not, but I hardly ever missed one of that guy's episodes. I really enjoyed his show. I can't remember if he... Ask any sailor that's been to the Philippines, and they'll tell you what a balut is, because they walk down the street with their little cart, balut, and every sailor wants to hit him in the head with a stick.
Yeah, balut's probably Tagalog for let's see if this dumbass drunk sailor will eat this. Yeah.
But your Filipino buddy sitting right next to you, he just snatches one up and acts like it's a treat. Are you shitting me?
Nah, he's not. No, no, no.
I can't get through the spell.
He's part of the con. The one he's eating is a freaking Cadbury cream egg.
I bet so, too. And then just waiting for you. Go ahead, now your turn. I don't think so, buddy. Yeah,
I wasn't in the Philippines, and I can vaguely remember eating off the Thai food carts in Bonchon. The most memorable thing to me was getting Chatamian Saunam, which is iced tea with milk.
Oh, gross.
Oh, no, delicious. I'm very fortunate.
You hook to your finger, and then you drink it with a straw out of a plastic bag.
Yeah, and see, not too far from here, and it's kind of unusual for this area of West Virginia, but we've got a wonderful Thai lady who runs a little restaurant, and it's, you know, it's not go in and order off the menu. She fixes stuff, and you eat what she fixes. And she makes these beautiful curries, but she just calls it Thai tea. But it's tea done up with sweetened condensed milk and a bunch of spices. And there's vanilla and and it is delicious.
Hmm. You're talking about chai tea, Bob?
No, Thai tea, not chai. It's kind of like
Chatamian Saunam, that's what it was called.
I'm culturally starved. I only have regular old iced tea in that cup.
Oh, this stuff is some special kind of good. And I probably eat there once a week, because you walk in there, and she gives you a tray of food for like $8 that'll make two meals.
There you go. You know, two things I want to say. One, I saw Anthony Bourdain's show when he went to West Virginia. That was a fantastic show. And they put on a feed, too. And damn, I wish I was smart enough to remember what the second thing I was going to say. Well, there's another one dropped right out of my head, but I did see him go to West Virginia. And it was beautiful. I remember that lady making spaghetti pizza.
Spaghetti pizza?
Yes, yes. She said, I bet you've never had spaghetti pizza. And I was thinking to myself, no, I haven't either.
Oh, my God.
I remember one of the comments from one of the guys said that they used to make that food because they were poor. Now they make that food because it tastes damn good. You know, and a lot of recipes, a lot of food that we've all eat across the country, I guess, stems from, you know, poor times when you didn't have anything, you know, your family growing up, all that stuff. Unless you was Donald Trump and just had a silver spoon stuck up your butt.
Or a shiny hiney.
Like,
or a shiny honey.
So is that the food du jour that West Virginia is known for, Bob?
No, I'd never heard of that before in my life.
You didn't see that episode?
Oh, no, I saw the episode, but I'd never heard it. I'd never heard of spaghetti pizza. I mean, but, you know, what you wind up with is a lot of catch-as-catch-can food, and it turns out to be pretty damn good. The official state snack of West Virginia is the pepperoni roll. And it was
pepperoni, what?
The pepperoni roll. And it was invented. See, what would happen is European migrants would land in New York, and they would get shanghaied to Appalachia to work in the mines. Not far from me, there's a ruin of a little tiny town called Brooklyn, spelled the same way as, you know, New York. And the story goes that there would be coal company assholes waiting on the boats, and they'd go, "Yeah, hey, buddy, you want to go to Brooklyn? Yeah. See?" And, you know, 12 hours later, they kick them off the train in the middle of the New River Gorge. Welcome to Brooklyn.
Welcome to Brooklyn. Grab a shovel.
And so these migrant workers were brought in largely to, A, make up for a shortfall in the local workforce, and B, to try to defeat any union activities. They died like flies in the mines because they had no mining skills. And the Monongah disaster, you can look it up. But along the way, their wives had to figure out a way to feed their men when they went into the mines. And so they got sausages, what we call pepperoni, and they cut them into long sticks originally. Now they're slices. It's not near as good. And they made up a bread dough, and if they were doing really good that week, they'd throw in some cheese. But it's just pepperoni rolled up in bread dough and baked. And a couple of those things will keep you going.
That sounds good.
Oh, they're delicious. They're absolutely delicious. And every little convenience store in West Virginia sells them. And the very best ones are to be had at a little place near Fairmont called Country Club Bakery. And they still do them with the sticks instead of the slices. You just get a better pepperoni flavor out of that stick cut than you do out of the...
You're making me hungry here, Bob.
Well, I mean, that's the food porn part of the program, John, and we all
suffer together. The last time I was on your show, we was talking about how lucky we are sometimes when our fans send us stuff. And, you know, and you get to taste all different stuff. Today I got a package in the mail from a gentleman here in Texas, and he sent me a jar of peach. It's called frog jelly, but it's got raspberries and fig, and then a bottle of hot sauce and something else I can't remember right now. But man, I'm telling you, that peach pecan jam that's to kill for. That's pretty darn good. I'm having it in the morning.
That sounds delicious.
Oh yeah.
Where's that made? Georgia or something or what?
No, actually, it comes from Burnett, Texas. At the Scenic Tire Biter Ranch. That's the name of the place, and it's they have a large. We have a large pecan and peach crop here in Texas. As a matter of fact, our hill country is known for its peaches.
Okay.
So we compete a little bit with Georgia, but Georgia's known for its peaches, so we can't. Texas produces fine peaches.
And Alabama always goes begging, but some of the finest peaches on earth come from Clanton, Alabama. In fact, when you're going down I-65, you'll see a great big water tower done up in the shape of a peach. And my favorite peach is a white freestone, you know, because you're not trying to suck all the flesh off of the pit there, and it just pulls away. And so sweet and so good. But while we're talking, since we've moved on to fruit, a bit of a complaint.
Uh-oh.
I'm sick and tired of seedless watermelons. They were in
you know,
it was gonna
they seem to be sweeter to me.
See, I don't think they've got the same flavor that a nice seedy watermelon does.
Well, my wife told me the last one we bought, she just said it's just not as sweet as they used to be. And, you know, I think she's got a point. You know, of course, we're talking about 40, 50 years ago, how we used to get a, you know, what a watermelon tastes like. You know, things have changed because a peach doesn't taste like what I remember a peach tasting.
Now,
you know, there's a lot of stuff that.
Down where you are, John, can you get yellow watermelons?
Yes, you can. You can get them in the store. I don't know where them things come from.
Oh, I love yellow watermelon. Nothing like it.
There's very, very little in the fruit family that I don't like.
The only way I get a watermelon is if it grows through my fence from my neighbors.
Yeah. You ain't got long arms?
My neighbor is Mexican. Has
he's got a watermelon
orange,
patch.
He's got everything. He just grew some onions.
Oh, Lord.
But if the watermelon vines creep through my fence, we got an understanding. If the watermelon grows on my side of the fence, it's mine.
You know, if you start early enough and get you a little stick, you can go right through the fence and start pulling that little vine your way.
Well, I have to get closer. Close enough yet. He usually gives me one anyway.
Good man.
My mom used to like to or try to grow watermelons in Montana. I think we only grew them one year where they actually had watermelons. It's just
they're even kind of tough to grow this far north.
Yeah, they're tough.
But we grow everything in this country. I swamped peaches when I was in high school up here. Just a few miles down the road from where I live.
Yeah, we.
Every now and again, out in the woods in West Virginia, you can find a wild plum. And they're tiny, but God, they're like candy. Oh, they're sweet. They're so good.
See, that's probably something like, you know, it's been just because being wild has been seeded out and grown again in the whole, you know, duration.
Yeah.
And whereas a lot of the stuff we get has been modified or grafted or tried to do this, that, or the other. I don't know. Get them to grow more and faster. You know, I don't know.
I get little trees growing all over my yard. I got a walnut tree growing in a park where my hedge died. Thanks to blue jays. They bring nuts and stuff. I had a pecan growing, a pecan tree right where I stacked my wood pile that I had to pull out. But the blue jays hide those nuts everywhere.
Well, howdy. I got a great big old grapevine and on my property. It's right next to a very, very huge oak tree. I have about four extremely large oak trees that I worry about all the time because if they fall, which several on my property have over the years, it's going to take my house out. But right next to one of them down by the riverbank it's a grapevine. I can't remember the name of the grape now. Anyway, that old grapevine winds all up in the canopy of these trees on my property. This thing is 100 years old. The story goes, when I bought this property, I told my wife, right there, that's where the gold is. Because we live not far from an old town called San Patricio that is no longer really a community, but in the old days when Texas first settled, it used to be a little town. That's where a lot of merchants came, sailing their ships up the Nueces River to do their trade. If a man was going to go into town and going to hide his gold anywhere, well, he'd hide it someplace where he'd remember where he... I swear there's gold up underneath there. I'm going to find it one day. This used to be a border town. As a matter of fact, when the Texas-Mexico border was the Nueces River instead of the Rio Grande.
Oh, now see, I got a geographic fetish. Now I've got to go and look on the map and find the old border of Texas. Yeah.
Yes, it was.
We were talking about Netroots Nation a little bit last time we talked, John. I found a little hotel in New Orleans, and it's one of those buildings that's been there forever. It's not in the quarter. It's not in the Vieux Carré. It's off of Canal Street, down by Poydras and Magazine.
Oh, that's good in area.
And
Garden District in there.
and the building itself has an arcade in it. And it's been there since the 1820s. And that particular, just because I'm such a history nerd, I wanted to find out about it. And it turns out that is actually the building where plotters from Texas came to sit down and have a meeting with business interests, moneyed people from New Orleans, and got the initial backing for the Texas Revolution against Mexico in that building where there's a hotel now. It's a great hotel,
too. I vaguely remember a story, because Texas history being one of my favorite, I like, you know, how can you not? I live in this state. But it just seems to me New Orleans, the story of financing, and that story I remember reading about one time. I can't remember the story. I just remember Louisiana was involved and there was money. But that's what I always remind people. You always attack that guy here in Texas that's got one of them Succeed stickers on his truck. Right over there next to the American flag, mind you. You know, I'm a true blue American, blessed to see.
I mean, I love
that. And piss on every grave there. The people that fought in the Alamo that we're all so proud of here in Texas were not from Texas. They were from everywhere, from Tennessee, from Virginia, from Florida, to Louisiana, Maine. They were people from all over the place.
And they showed up there because people from all over the South understood that the first fight about slavery was to be had in Texas.
It was.
Because everybody who fired back at the Mexican army from the ramparts of the Alamo were doing so in defense of slavery.
Unfortunately, Texas was on that side of the fence. They still had a celebration up north, I can't remember, Claiborne or somewhere like that, of the old South, the Southern Guard. But yeah, Texas was one of the major naval battles of stuff down here during the Civil War.
Yep. So, the blockade of the Gulf Coast ran from Corpus Christi all the way past Mobile.
Yes. Yeah. It's, history is always something, a good, nice walk down a path right there, because you learn so much everywhere.
Oh, I can't help it. I'm drawn to it like a moth to flame.
Yeah.
Let me share a note here. This is good. This is cowbell worthy. Courtesy of Ron and Raleigh. Subject line: watermelon. It's nice to hear it's nice to hear a bunch of white folks sitting around talking about watermelon. And Ron then says, "You know, they aren't good unless they're freshly stolen."
Yes.
And then just because of the way the universe works with the Horn Family Community Congregation, I get this from the other Ron, who is presently spending a little time down here in the hills and hollers. Old joke: farmer in Georgia had a watermelon patch. Every year he had many watermelons stolen. He decided to put up a fence and put a sign on the fence that said, "One of these watermelons has been poisoned." The next morning, the sign had been altered to say, "Now two of these watermelons have been poisoned." And Ron, by the way, John, is an old salt like yourself, and I don't know if he's actually consumed a balut or not, but he knew exactly what you were talking about.
Well, there you go. Anybody in the Navy, I guarantee you, just about knows what a balut is. If you've been in that part of the world, that's good.
I'm not
poisoning two watermelons, so that's a way to get him.
My brother.
My favorite watermelons, we used to swim across this, in Louisiana, they would call them pits, where they old dug gravel out to build shit, because they had to make land because the water table was so low, but it'd fill up with water, be a pit, and we'd swim across there. Get watermelons out of this old boy's patch and put them in the water and push them all the way back across the lake and just to sit over there and eat them. And best watermelons I ever had. So the old boy's got a point. The best ones are the ones you steal.
I was going to say my brother was in the Navy during Vietnam, and he always talked about Subic Bay all the time.
My second home.
Being a really crazy place to be anyway, so I don't know if he ate what you're talking about or not, I'll have to ask him next time I see him. So
if he got drunk enough, he may have. He may have attempted. There's not a one of us that didn't try. I'm truthful. I'll fess up. Nope. Got it right there by my nose, and it just wasn't going any farther. But I have seen many of my friends pop that thing in their mouth and start crunching down and just puke all over the place. And he is correct. Subic City, Subic Bay is where the base was. Alangapo was the city right there at the base. But if you got in a jeepney and traveled about an hour, I think it's north, you come to Subic City. Subic City was a place where, oh, Sodom and Gomorrah did not have a thing on this place. I mean, that's what it was. Was just decadence all over the place. And just really a nasty place to be. So we went there every weekend just about.
I was going to say, and we loved it, right?
Yes, we did.
Sounds just like New Land in Thailand.
There was a lot of games played that in today's atmosphere would not be good conversation. Just, you know, one of them things, I guess.
Well, as we approach the very end of the program, we got about 14 minutes before it ends. I have to extend thanks. You know, our buddy Steve from Georgistan, before he headed out the door to go and vomit from the top of the Ferris wheel, Steve put forward the Shiny Heiny Challenge because we started the program with a $480 fundraising deficit, and I'm happy to say that our buddy Mark, who I don't know, may have been to the Philippines and may have even tried a balut too. I don't know. Mark's a Marine.
A lot of Marines there.
Well, I can see the Marines being the ones who went, Semper Fi, damn it, I'm going to eat one of these.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, sir.
I'll still be a Marine even if it kills me.
That's it, baby. I'll go down in a fight. Yep, watch this. I'm tough. Yep, that's my brother.
So Mark answered Steve from Georgistan's Shiny Heiny Challenge and bumped it by 10 bucks. So we are now down to 480. Wait, ciphering. God damn it. We're now down to 440, 440 to go for fundraising to finish the week. And
a wonderful voltage.
You know, I knew the minute I said 440 that we were going to get it's one of your better voltages, isn't it, Sparky?
Yeah, for running industrial applications.
My dad once got a nice dose of 440. There was a crack on the tap room floor at the furnace, and some water had accumulated in it. And well, there was a kind of a little raw spot on an electrical cable, and he actually accidentally touched the water and got a nice loading dose.
Well, I do know what it feels like to bite through my tongue.
That is about like do a, it.
Just like gristle on a steak, except my teeth went right through it. Yeah, I've been hit before. That was the worst. That was the worst time, though. And that was only 220, but I was wet. And I was lucky I got thrown clear from it.
That 440, he said that 440 threw him damn near across the room.
Yeah, it'll knock you. And you have to be careful. That, you know, you get shocked like that, and you walk away from it, and you think, oh, man, that was bad. I hope I'm all right. Well, you might not be. 20, 30 minutes later, that stuff could hit.
Oh yeah, well it messes with the entire electrical rhythm of your body.
Yeah,
I got nailed one time. I saw the white light, and I was rattled for like 2 hours after that.
Yeah, it'll rattle your cage, buddy. I'm telling you, I do my best to stay away from it.
Guys on the job come around, and I was sitting in the back of the trailer, and they looked at me and they go, "What happened to you? You got shocked, didn't you?" And I said, yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. Yep. I try not to do that anymore.
That was my one time. I said to myself, I'll never do that again.
But I've run most of my external lines at this house. I've had to put in probably six different circuits since I bought this house. I trust my work. I don't trust anybody else's work.
Well, since we've gone down the oh my God food trail, I was
trying to get over the shiny hiney stuff.
Well, I mean, right, but you know, Sparky helped out in the chat room. He actually managed to do a screen cap of exactly the moment when the shiny hiney lady looks over her shoulder with that mouthful of vinegar look, and perfect eye makeup, and just looks so distressed to have just realized that she, you know, actually has a hiney that's probably not shiny.
That's just the way it posted from the link.
Oh, I thought I thought you actually made an effort to get that, because that's perfect. That's exactly moment.
That's the YouTube link I posted. Yeah. That popped up. See the little red.
Oh yeah.
Hair on her nose.
Yep.
Yeah.
She looks extremely distressed. But that's okay. A few minutes later, she'll be twirling in a yellow sundress, having just made her hiney smell like citrus and ginger and polished it to a high gloss with the lightning cream.
Oh, it makes you almost want to eat it, doesn't it?
God. but anyway, Brother Deacon Asa says, worse than balut in the Philippines. Okay, this is a challenge.
Uh-oh. What could be worse than that? Tell me.
The live squid from Korea. At least balut is cooked, sorta. You know.
Well, it's rotted.
Right. It's not fermented.
Not particularly cooked, but it's rotted. Yeah.
Fermentation is a form of cooking. He says, you have no idea how often... You wait for this.
I cannot hear anything.
Yeah, Steve, but you're really breaking up.
Yeah, just...
I don't really want anything that I try that when I hit it with a fork, it's trying to grab the fork.
Well, that's the thing. He said, you have no idea how awful it is trying to down those moving tentacles.
Yeah, that's what that was. Yeah. I'd be in the same boat with the blue. No, that's all right, party. I ain't going that far.
Hey, Steve, how you doing? There you
doing
are.
Well, how are you? Yeah, there I are. Yeah, I'm doing okay. Just getting home. I apologize. I joined real late. I was just getting home.
Well, I was just hoping we would. And by the way, John, you're free to use this. It's courtesy of the fraternity of Steve at the Horn. We've got a new name for the President of the United States, courtesy of Steve.
All right. I need a new name.
And Steve came up with it based on, you know, I was talking about the thing in Montana last night. I said, these aren't speeches, these are harangues. And the light immediately went on above Steve's head, and he's got one for the ages, John. He's now President Harangutang.
President Orangutang. Well, he's orange enough, he fits right in there.
And he harangues.
He does. Oh, he rang. Oh, there you go. Okay.
President Harangutang.
Harangutang. Yeah. Well, I'll add that to the list of things I call him on a daily basis.
That's for the ages.
Well, I'm stuck on he's a dick. You know, people have sent me shirts. He's a dick. They got a crossword puzzle with I-C-K and who the hint over here, you know, Donald Trump. I've got several dick shirts from my fans. Because I'm always calling. He's a dick, and he does dick things.
Well, and see, that's why we keep this handy, Professor Spicoli.
Here you go.
You dick.
You know.
That's it. That's what he is, man. He's a dictator. A little dictator. So that's what he wants to be. Tell me that's not what everybody thinks. You know, if he could find a way to just become King Potentate forever, well, that's what he'd do. And it's just sick. But that's what we was talking about earlier, Bob. When you do this kind of stuff, you're digging in the news every day, and you're trying to read every story or get every little thing up in your head, and it damn near makes you sick. You know, it's just...
It has not proven good for my innards.
No.
So, Steve, I want to hear from you in the last remaining moments of the program, because I'm tickled that you wandered by.
Uh-huh. I don't know what's to hear from me. Long days, new law practice, my law partner just bugged out, and I found out he was working at a job. I don't know. Just living the dream, I guess. trying to stay away from the news as much as I can because it's beyond words to me.
I can relate. Everybody can relate to that.
You
can get overload with that shit.
Yeah. And in fact, one of the most frustrating things for me is, and I have, Bob and I have talked about this endlessly, is if the Democrats win in November, it's going to be in spite of themselves. Because I find, in particular, Charles Schumer, Mitch McConnell, who is the wretched piece of shit that he is, and worse.
Exactly.
Is excellent at politics. Can't govern. Has no conscience. And the Democrats are constantly violating one of the rules of the law of... Oh, my God. I just saw a family of five raccoons walk in front of my path here in the Bronx.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah.
There you go.
Don't worry. ICE will pick them up.
Yeah, right.
They're the wrong color, Steve.
Yeah,
hot on their trail as we speak.
Yeah, they got masks on.
Cool.
And I think one of the rules of the law, I forgot the damn Sun Tzu's book, The Art of War. One of the rules is you don't play on your opponent's turf. Mm-hmm. And when I saw this crap about, oh, McConnell should live up to the rule that he established, I thought, are you a fool? That's not what you do.
It's a futile attempt to shame the shameless.
You can't shame somebody without a conscience.
No.
I mean, my new logo is, I know Michelle, the last legitimate first lady, said, you know, when they go low, we go high. And my comment is, when they go low, we punch them in the head.
There you go, bud. I like your attitude, Steve. I say when they go low, I'll be there waiting for them.
Yeah.
I'll be there. I'm ready for them. I'm tired of taking the high road. I can't
talk. Have your machete handy when they go low, right?
That's it, baby. Chop them toes right off there.
Yeah.
Right. Knock them down to my sides. I'm ready for that shit. They did not give us any slack the 8 years of Obama.
No.
So that's where I draw my line. Don't come whining to me about what I'm saying about Donnie.
Right. It's not just with Obama. I mean, I worked on Capitol Hill. I was a member of staff in 96.
Yes, sir.
So I was there right after the GOP took over. And I saw it. I saw the tricks. There was never any decorum. There was never anything within the quote-unquote norms of the past. So this isn't new. The problem is the Democrats have continued to play that game, and the GOP hasn't, which is why the losses have been epic. You know, there's a statistic that I found that I've heard very few people talk about what happened in, I think it was 2010 midterms. The Democrats lost close to 700 seats in that one election in state and local races across the country.
Yes, it was a big loss.
And it's just gone down since then. And... The Democrats seem to have focused for so long on the White House and what happens at the federal level that we're at a point where, at least as far as I'm concerned, we've got no bench.
Well, for years they've been talking about that the Republicans have been taking over, like you say, state governments.
School boards.
Everything.
City councils, everything.
They motivated them up during the Tea Party thing. They all rose up and were going to get involved. And that's how they got involved. That's how my congressman got elected, was through that Tea Party stuff with that uprising of morons. And the biggest thing that we have is we played nice for so long. And we took Obama's advice, Michelle's advice, when they go low, we go high. And that's a wonderful sentiment. We all wish we could do that. But you see what it's getting us.
Yeah. I mean, you can have the best ideas in the world, but if you're not in power, then it's, as a friend of mine once said, it's intellectual masturbation.
Yeah.
And we can shout from the outside and say, well, we have the better ideas.
Yeah.
But if we don't control it.
Your ideas don't get on the floor.
Well, we have what we have right now in the Senate, where we have a, you know, we're going to have a, you know, what do you call it? I have to tell you, from my the little in-depth study that I've done of Nazi Germany, this is how it started. This is how it happened. It's this, the consolidation of the, you know, the National Socialists consolidated power. There was a judiciary. There was a parliament then.
They burned the Reichstag down. There was, you know, he took control.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, I talked about that today on my show. The Donnie has a book of Hitler's speeches, because Hitler was a powerful speaker, and that's how he convinced all them good Christian Germans to spark up them ovens and let's go to war. It was his reach out to the common man. And Donnie tries to emulate that as much as he can. He riles up his base.
It was his promise to make Germany great again.
Great again. Yes, you're exactly right. And he during the First World War, when he served and they came out of there pissed off, he ends up in prison, and that's where he started his shit, was while he was lost.
And then the reaction of the German right...
Oh, those people from down there.
Yeah, and the reaction of the German right wing... to the, you know, to a greater degree of freedoms and sexuality in the Weimar Republic, and they were happy to see somebody come along who was going to bring them back to traditional Christian German values.
That's exactly right, Bob, and he did a wonderful job of it and made them feel great, patriotic as hell, and that's what you have to do, and that's what Donnie's trying to do, is get them all riled up.
And they screamed at the reporters and yelled, Lügenpresse, 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 which, of course, is just German for fake news.
Yes.
And think of this. Hitler preached this Aryan stuff, and he didn't look anything like it. And Donald has preached this whole, you know, Christian values, and he's nothing like it.
No. His daddy was a post office postmaster, I think, up in an Austrian town. I read the life and death of Adolf Hitler when I was about 20 years old. I'm sitting here trying to remember half. That was a thick ass book.
Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, William Manchester.
Yes. Very big book. No, this was the life and death of Adolf Hitler. It was pretty interesting. You know, he was an artist. He was a pretty damn good artist when he was in Venice. You know, he was damn near a liberal until he went to the First World War, when he came out, gas and all that stuff. He came out with a bitter taste, just like any man would going to war. But he saw the evil as those other people.
Well, here's another similarity. Hitler was the art establishment, the fine arts establishment, wouldn't accept him. And my understanding was, in Austria at the time, there were a good contingent of Jewish folks who were in the arts. Well, think of how he was here in New York. You have all these high, you know, traditional money people who would never accept him.
Yeah.
And it's
you see a similarity there?
Of course.
I see it today. I swear it. He's playing right out of Hitler's playbook.
Jesus Christ, Stephen Miller's just the reincarnation of pick one.
That ain't no lie. That's very true, Bob. That guy, you can just look at him, and
that's
it
Goebbels.
Just oozes. Yes, it does. You can
give
put
that, yeah, give that German. Little, give that little prick a set of wire rim glasses or a monocle, and you know, you're right there.
Oh man,
y'all are being too complimentary about Stephen Miller, because I can't look at Stephen Miller without thinking he catches bugs with his tongue.
I believe you're right.
Wait a minute.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. That was cowbell worthy.
The first live cowbell of the evening.
You got a cowbell? Bob, can you hear mine?
Yes, I absolutely do.
Okay, that's my... Yep, ding, you got it right.
Bob has a cowbell, thank you, thanks to me.
Yes, this is not just any cowbell. This is an ancient cowbell.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Well, that does sound like an ancient, it would be around an ancient cow.
Kurt, yeah, no cowbell for that, John. But
we need more cowbell.
Yeah, courtesy of Sparky, we have a cowbell.
There you go, bub. Good deal, Sparky.
Well, so I hate to say it, but we're actually 5 minutes over, and we got to get out of here, but it's been a rousing, good, fun end of the week, and I appreciate it.
Piss on them people, Doc. Bob, let's just keep going.
Hey, I have a question. What's the I'm sorry, I don't remember your name. You have the blue dot down there.
Oh, John Bridevo.
Oh,
John.
Yes.
Let me tell you something.
We'll do an after hours thing here.
For me, there's nothing better than a Texas liberal. I'll tell you, one of my favorite Texas liberals was Molly Ivins, and
I miss that woman.
Oh, I wish I missed that woman that right now.
She was a great writer. I waited for her articles all the time. I really do miss that woman. Her and Ann Richards. I loved them both, baby. Mm-hmm. Have you seen my show, Blue Dot in Texas?
No, I'm going to have to check it out. I just haven't had a chance to get on the internet much lately. So.
I try to scream. I scream three times a week now.
Okay. Mm.
And it's some of the more enjoyable screaming you will be exposed to. It's not like a orangutan screaming about not having an organ in Montana. So, you know.
Bob's show, you're going to learn something. Over on my show, you're going to go, listen to that guy. He's really pissed off.
I like the July 4th show, John. I listened to that. That was a good show.
What's that?
I listened to your July 4th program on Facebook.
Oh, thank
very,
you.
Very, very good.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I also watched it too, John. I enjoyed it.
I appreciate that.
Is it on YouTube or how do I find it?
It's on. You can find me on a Blue Dot in Texas on YouTube or on Facebook under my name, John Bridevo.
I've been off Facebook for about 6 months, and honestly, I don't miss it.
That's where I have we just went over 10,500 and something followers.
Oh yeah, I heard about that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. That is. We hit a bump and people started liking me. They really like me. We're just having a ball with it. It's a lot of. I'd say it's a lot of fun, but as Bob and I were just talking, it can get damn well overbearing at times because it's a constant barrage of shit.
And it's. I don't want to say it's unbelievable. Every time somebody says, "Oh my God, this is unbelievable," my response is, "Actually, it's not."
No. Wait till tomorrow.
Well, it's like when we have a mass shooting and someone's some idiot from the for-profit media will say, "Well, this was unthinkable." No, dumbass. It was predictable and it was foreseeable.
We don't know the time and the place. That's the only thing we don't know because it will happen again.
Yeah, it's the National Ruble. I mean, Rifle Association's roulette wheel of death.
That's it.
It's a lottery.
Look who they got nowadays, Ollie North.
Yeah, it's a lottery, and everybody has a ticket, and nobody wants their number drawn.
Yeah,
it's kind of like an NRA blood draft.
Somebody's gonna get it. Somebody's gonna get that ticket. You know, and then it'll all be here we go again.
Sometimes they draw 17 tickets. Sometimes they draw 24.
Yeah.
Sometimes they draw 5. But the thing is, the tickets get drawn.
Yep. It hasn't stopped.
Yep.
Well, we have to keep working on that shit, Bob.
Well, we do. We absolutely do. Once again, John, I want to thank you for popping by. It's a wonderful opportunity to chat with you and everybody else in the Friday on the Front Porch family congregation. It's been a blast, and maybe we'll get a little cross pollination going between the Blue Dot Nation and the Horn Family Community Congregation. And then who knows what'll happen.
Just spread this message. Just keep it going.
Exactly. You keep them good and fired up, and I'll disgust them by talking about the shiny hiney.
Inform them. You inform them. Yes, we all need to know a little bit about that shiny hiney shit. I'm telling you. I'm gonna go ask my wife, honey. Have you heard of the shiny hiney shit?
Send us back a picture of you with the black eye, would you, John?
Yeah, I was fixing to say, I'll call you from the hospital.
Yeah, right.
That was real funny, Bob.
Yeah, that goddamn iron skillet came out of nowhere.
Right, Papa. You got that right.
Y'all have a wonderful evening. It's been a blast.
Thanks,
y'all. So thanks to Steve from Georgistan, and thanks to John Britovo, a blue dot in Texas over on YouTube. Thank you very kindly to Irwin up in Montana. Thanks to Billable Rick. Thanks to Steve in New York. Thank you, Megan, for coming by and adding some extra perspective this evening. And thanks to Sparky, who's been moderating this little affair for on Fridays for God Almighty years on end. So here we are at 10 minutes past the hour. Ran over a little bit, but boy, it was worth it. And we will. I hope maybe over the weekend knock down some of that 440. Maybe if we could take it down to a lower voltage, like, say, 220 or something, 220, 225, whatever it takes. If we could knock it all the way down to zero, then we've got an ordinary little More In Monday coming our way this Monday, the 9th of July. I sure hope so. If you want to help out, run over to headon.live, use the PayPal link, or become a subscriber at Patreon. That's really cool, too. And the more the merrier, because this is the only way this stays on the air, plain and simple. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. I understand, Alma. Thank you so much. Alma says, I am afraid for this country. There's plenty to be afraid for. But at least we've got a little community where we can keep the conversation going and maybe hold back the darkness a little bit. Thank you very kindly to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation that's been going on for 15 years or so now. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve from Georgistan. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.